I'd like to call this committee in Council and Committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
All members of Council are present, Your Worship, with the exception of Councilor Zanko.
Thank you. Just a few announcements this evening. There is no addendum. Last week, all of the municipalities in Ontario gathered in Ottawa for the Association of Municipalities of Ontario annual meeting. Councillor Cyril and Councillor Nutt and I were there in attendance with our CAO. I had the opportunity to sit in on some meetings with several representatives of the government. The first meeting, along with the regional delegation, was with the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Municipal Affairs. We discussed the Gateway Corridor, which is the land along the Queen Elizabeth Highway between Niagara Falls and Fort Erie, and then north and south of that. One of the main issues had to do with the Ministry of Natural Resources mapping not only of that corridor area, but really of all of Niagara, and the issues that we've had in the past dealing with the Ministry of Natural Resources. The meeting was notable in the sense that the Ministry of Municipal Affairs acknowledged that it should be involved in these discussions because the policies of that ministry and the Ministry of Natural Resources are frequently in conflict. And so having them together during meetings should assist and facilitate the type of mapping that affects all the development that can take place in that corridor and really at this stage of the game within Niagara. The follow-up meeting, again, with the regional delegation with the Minister of Economic Development, Brad Duguid, again, we talked about the mapping and the need for policies of the various government ministries to be consistent. And that meeting was specifically about the trade corridor, the request of the region to be designated by the federal government as a trade corridor in conjunction with its previous designation as a foreign trade zone. And so the request was for the provincial government to support the region as that moves forward. Immediately thereafter, I guess one meeting thereafter, Councillors Nutt, Basiro, and I had an opportunity to meet with Minister Duguid, and we talked about the studies and the policies that the town of Fort Erie has been adopting over the past year to deal with growth and development, and requested his assistance primarily in making sure that the policies of the various government agencies are dealt with in an effective manner, because otherwise they constitute impediments to the growth and prosperity of our municipality, the region, and really the province. And then finally, the town delegation had an opportunity to meet with the Minister of Tourism, Eleanor McMahon. We talked about three specific things. One was our desire to improve the coal docks so that it can be utilized as part of our parkland system along the Niagara River. And we are, as you know, working on a waterfront strategy and develop our parklands. She's very interested in that. She's a particularly avid cyclist, and so she's very interested in the recreation trails and the enhancements to the Niagara Parks Trail that's going to take place between Bowen Road and the south end of Fort Erie. We talked about the Niagara Peninsula, the Niagara Parks Commission Marina, which is currently nearing the end of a request for proposal process that matures on August the 28th. We expressed some concerns about that and gave some background detail with respect to that. And then finally, we talked about the issues relative to the Fort Erie Racetrack, the Woodbine Paul stall policy, and our desire to enhance horse racing here by the reintroduction of slots at our racetrack. All of those meetings, I think, went very well. We were supported extremely well by the CAO and his assistant, Bev Bradman, who put together a presentation for us to give to the Minister of Tourism. Then there were some events that I wanted to make reference to. Yesterday, Sunday, the Canadian-Cuban Friendship Association held its annual barbecue at the old fort here in Fort Erie, and the consul from the Cuban embassy in Toronto, Susana Malmierca Benitez, was in attendance along with three of her colleagues from the consulate. And they celebrated the 72 years of continuous diplomatic relations between Canada and Cuba, and it was a very well attended event. Later yesterday afternoon, Communities in Bloom had its 2017 awards celebration, and I wanted to congratulate both Councillor Lubritz, who's a member of the committee, and Councillor Passero for emceeing that particular event. It went very well. There were a large number of individuals who were recognized for their gardens, and I did want to specifically mention the members of that committee who've done a fantastic job this past year getting things organized as we lead into next year, when we anticipate that we'll be again competing in some type of international competition. The members of that committee, starting with the chair, Maria Toy, the secretary, Sharon Gill, the treasurer, Shirley Stoppard, vice chair, Winnie Swam, and Brian Wright, joined by Councillor Don Lubritz and our staff representative, Signe Hansen, who's also done a remarkable job working with that committee. Some of the awards that were handed out were for some remarkable work done by individuals on their personal property, both commercial, institutional, and residential. I attended on Friday evening an event. It was a fundraiser for an organization called Person-Centered Care, which I had very little knowledge of, but it's an organization that is about a year old, and it provides outreach services, person-directed planning and programming, person-centered programming, day services and supports run out of the Optimist Hall, and it's primarily for individuals with disabilities or maladies such as autism, and it's actually quite a growing organization, and I thought it was notable. I'm going to provide counselors with some background information because it was new to me and something that I was quite impressed with, and that's that was on Friday evening. And then finally, wanted to make mention of a letter that I received about a week ago relative to one of the Town of Fort Erie employees, Doug Eden. He has been recognized by the Association of Ontario Road Supervisors as an Associate Road Supervisor. So he's been given that certification. The Association of Ontario Road Supervisors was created in 1961. Since 1996, it has the authority to grant, pursuant to provincial legislation, the exclusive right to the use of designation Certified Road Supervisor. And this certification has four levels, Associate, CRS, Intermediate, and Senior. And Doug Eden, who is a long-term employee of the Town of Fort Erie, has now been recognized with the Associate Road Supervisor certification. So on behalf of the council, I wanted to recognize Mr. Eden, and congratulations, Mr. Cookett. So, are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? I have a disclosure with respect to report PDS 51, 2017, which relates to the playground at Bay Beach as part of that development. Since I'm a member of the Ridgeway Lions Club and do for them, I will declare a conflict, and I'll be asking for that report to be removed from the consent agenda, and Councillor McDermott to take the chair when that report is on the floor. There's a public notice of an upcoming public meeting relative to a rezoning bylaw amendment for a number of addresses on Hibbard Street, which is the Willow Trail townhouse development. That will take place on Tuesday, September the 5th at 6 p.m. in the Town Hall Council Chambers. The information report for that public meeting will be available on our website on August the 30th, 2017. We have three public meetings this evening. We're going to start with the public meeting relative to 185 Catherine Street, which is an application for rezoning by 800547 Ontario Limited Park Lane Homes, the principal of which is Ed Lenshishin. This is a public meeting, and I will call on pursuant to the Planning Act, and I will call on Mr. Kernahan to provide us with some background information. Kernahan, good evening.
Bylaw, there it is. Thank you. A zoning bylaw amendment application was received from Jennifer Vita of Upper Canada Consultants, who's the agent on behalf of Ed Lenshishin of 800547 Ontario Limited, who's the owner of 185 Catherine Street. The purpose of the proposed zoning bylaw amendment is to permit the conversion of the existing dwelling on the subject property to a duplex dwelling. The construction to convert the dwelling to a duplex was started without a permit early this year. Planning and building staff became aware of this in late March and advised the owner to stop construction. The owner complied with staff's request and has been working towards getting the necessary approvals since that time. Notification of this public meeting was provided in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act by placing an ad in the July 27th, 2017 edition of the Fort Erie Times. In addition, property owners living within 120 meters were mailed the notice of this complete application on the same date. This is an aerial photograph of the subject property and the surrounding area. Subject lands are located in the Fort Erie or South End neighborhood on the south side of Catherine Street, east of Concession Road. Lands surrounding the subject site comprise the following uses. To the south, east, and west, there are single detached dwellings, and to the north is Catherine Street and more single detached dwellings. Subject property is designated urban residential in the town's official plan. The official plan permits the full range of dwelling types, including duplex dwellings. The slide shows that there are no natural heritage features on or in the vicinity of the subject property. Subject property is currently zoned residential 2R2 zone, which permits single detached dwellings and accessory apartments. The proposed dwellings do not meet the criteria for a single detached dwelling with an accessory apartment, but rather fall under the definition of a duplex. The zoning bylaw amendment proposes to rezone the property to a site-specific R2 zone that would permit the proposed duplex dwelling. In addition, site-specific regulations to address some existing deficient setbacks for side yard, as well as the side yard setback for the accessory structure and the eaves are, and the eaves of the accessory structure are also proposed. This slide shows the site plan for the property. The existing dwelling that is proposed to be converted to a duplex is shown on the left, and the existing detached garage is shown on the right. The site-specific zoning proposes to recognize the existing deficient side yard setback of the dwelling from the western property line on the left, and the existing deficient setbacks of the garage and its eaves from the easterly property line on the right. Just a picture of the subject property looking south from Catherine Street. That concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. So at this time, as part of the public meeting, I will, if any members of council have any questions of Mr. Kernahan, then I, Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship, through you too, Mr. Kernahan. I just wanted some clarification. So the unit that's going to be turned into the duplex is going to be an upper and a lower? Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Councillor Lieberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Mr. Kernahan, can you just go back to the last slide that it shows the picture of the building? To me, when I'm looking at this, it looks like it's already a duplex. Is that something that was changed? Or was this a duplex before they started working on it as well?
My understanding is that the owner bought this property as a duplex. The legality of that duplex, staff don't have any knowledge of that. So what occurred was the owner of the property began construction and he tore out a good portion of the interior of the dwelling and started to reconstruct a duplex. So at that point, staff became aware of the construction and advised the staff and that he needed a zoning amendment to permit that duplex.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Kernahan. So as part of the public meeting, I will ask the applicant if he wishes to address council, and the applicant and the applicant's agent may do that. And then I'll ask members of the public if there's anyone who wishes to speak in support of or in opposition to. So is there someone who wishes to speak on behalf of the applicant? Please come forward. Can you provide your full name and address for the record, please?
Yep, just want to give some. Good evening, Council, staff of Town of Fort Erie, and citizens of Fort Erie. Let me introduce myself. I'm Deborah Hill of Park Lane Home Builders and eldest daughter of Edward Lentician. Tonight we are here for two reasons. Right now we're talking about Catherine Street. We're about rezoning two of our properties, the other being 168 High Street, 185 Catherine to be legally zoned to a duplex. The property located at 185 Catherine Street was recently purchased in October 2016. This purchase started off to be a possible purchase for one of our staff members. After he declined to buy the property, my dad, we knew that it would need an extensive renovation as it was very, very dated.
So the property had always been used as a duplex, and the fact that the previous owners continued to stay in the house for another month after the house closed. If you'll refer to the package that I just sent around, it will show the actual statement of adjustments. I know that they're looking for a bit of proof that it was a duplex. There's our statement of adjustments from the lawyer showing the breakdown of the apartments and the value of rent that they compensated us for on closing date. Also there is a copy of the hydro bills. There's a picture there showing the meters. There's 2 meters and there's 2 separate hydro bills. And also the initial listing when we purchased the house, how it was advertised as a duplex. So it was in fact used as a duplex for many years. I know we haven't talked about the other property yet, 168 High Street, but while I'm up, I'm going to speak about it. The other property, 168, to be rezoned to a fourplex. The existing house is a very large home.
Yeah. Hold it. Sorry. Yeah, we're just doing 185 Catherine Street. That's a separate, 168 will be a separate public meeting.
Okay. So I won't even mention it tonight?
You'll mention it at the next public meeting, which we're going to hold, which will deal specifically with 168.
Okay. I do know that the council is upset with how my father's conducted himself in recent years. They must know that he has endured some health changes, and for that reason, he's now retired. That is why my sister Kathy and myself and my children have stepped into the company to help help him. We had to learn a new job in the last year, uphold our responsibilities to the town of Fort Erie, along with taking care of my father's personal matters and health care, rental properties, etc. This has been a huge learning curve for all of us. He needs to be surrounded by people that he can trust. Once these projects, these two that we're just talking about, have been completed, we are not planning to do any more of these types of projects. Our passion is to continue to grow, to build new homes with Park Lane Homes, and to continue to offer quality-built homes for the Niagara residents. And that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, is there someone else that wished to speak on behalf of the applicant?
Good evening. My name is Jennifer Vita from Upper Canada Consultants. I'm the agent. I just want to thank Matt Kernahan for his presentation. I don't have anything to add, but I am here to answer any questions that you might have.
Any members of council have any questions of either Ms. Vita or Ms. Hill? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you. I just noticed through the statement of adjustments that you handed in that there was also rent for the basement. That's not going to be the case going forward, however. There's only going to be 2 apartments, upper and a lower.
That's correct.
What are you going to do with the basement?
The basement, I'm not sure. It will likely be storage for the owners or the renters.
Would Ms. Hill know that? Do you know, perhaps you could come back because there may be some questions with respect to this.
Yes, the basement will remain as a storage.
One more question, thank you. And what's the square footage for each apartment?
I think it's 1,000 square feet for each apartment.
Thank you.
Any other questions by members of council? Ms. Hill, since you've provided us with this statement of adjustments and you've made reference to the fact that this property has traditionally been a duplex, this was being rented as a triplex.
Well, the owners lived, it was all owner-occupied. So the owners all lived there when we purchased the house, and they were the ones, it was all owners that occupied the house. So, and I believe the listing did state...
listing says a multifamily duplex.
Yes, so it has one two-bedroom, 1 3-bedroom with the potential for a bachelor in the basement. I guess somebody was staying down there, but that wasn't our intent to have it, but they were living there. So it was all owner-occupied.
Well, the statement of adjustments would suggest that there were 3 individuals or 3 parties paying rent, one for the main floor, one for the upper floor, one for the basement. Mm-hmm. Typically, owners don't pay themselves rent.
No, they weren't. They're just because of the fact that the house closed at the end of October, they all continued to live in the house for a further month. So they gave us the credit based on they were occupying the house for a further month. That's why they were just giving us compensation because they were using the house for another month.
Do you know if the lawyer that represented the purchaser, that is your company, did any check as to the zoning of the property prior to the completion of the transaction?
No, I don't. I'm not aware of what he had looked into.
That's fine. Thank you. Any other questions of members of council? Thank you, ladies. I'll now ask if there's anyone other than the applicant who wishes to speak in favor of the application, or anyone who wishes to speak in opposition to the application. So I'm going to start with Ms. Smalden, if you'd like to come forward. You're together. You're a team. Please come forward. And please provide the your name, full names and address for the clerk.
Good evening, Council. My name is Pat Smalden, 20 Court Street. Ella Groh, 17 Court Street. And this is our first time, so bear with us. We took a petition around to the residents of Court Street and presented what we thought was a fair case of why we didn't want the duplex. And we have approximately 10 families. There's approximately 15 on the street. Five were away working or on vacation, so we weren't able to get their signatures. We felt it would become a low rental property, no property management on site. This allows other houses to be changed to the same concept of multi-dwellings. This changes the makeup of the neighborhood. It lowers the value of our property. Our property becomes less desirable with the influx of traffic. Neighborhood becomes noisier. These have been single family dwellings for 50 plus years. We want to know how this impacts our taxes. And as an example, the north end of Fort Erie had many homes turned into duplexes and prices went down with that. So this is how we feel at this point.
Thank you. Do any members of council have any questions of the delegates? And I've got the spelling of your name, Ms. Smalden. Your last name again?
Legros, L-E-G-R-O-S.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, Councillor Passero has a question.
Thank you both for attending. The evidence that we've received to date shows, for all intents and purposes, that this building had been utilized functioning as a duplex. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of that, or had you had concerns in the past of the way that it was being occupied?
Well, just from not that property per se, but many of the duplexes I've seen are not always kept up to what we call proper standards. Grass is long, needs painting, you know, garbage lots of times. I'm not saying this is what's going to happen here, but I'm just going by
what you've seen.
The places we've observed.
If I may, I've worked with property management in Hamilton. I know once one starts, another starts, another starts. It brings down.
So through you, Your Worship, so if we could find a way to make sure that standards were upheld, you don't necessarily have an issue with the property being utilized
fire
as a duplex.
Fire regulations, where I do know the basement's got to be up to code around the furnace and whatnot and electrical, everything else. And what if they were to sell and you get, say, a slumlord or somebody not looking after? There's noise bylaws, et cetera, fire, everything else, garbage. So what about that?
No, and I agree with you, and those are many of the same issues that we also face on a regular basis with single-family dwellings.
Once you start with that, another person can do it, off-site landlords. Who wants that? We don't want that in our neighborhood, and I'm sure we could have got many more signatures.
I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Want our listeners?
Yes, would you please pass that up to Councillor Passero? And just to follow up on what Councillor Passero had asked, we've been told that this property was used as a multifamily residence. Has that been your observation or experience?
I said I didn't know specifically about that property at the time, but we drove around and saw many other ones.
Councillors, thank you very much. And Mr. Gilmore, you had your hand up. Good evening. We need your name and address.
Good evening to all. My name is John Gilmore. I live at 158 High Street in Fort Erie. You know, this property doesn't affect me, but because the other one we're going to talk about tonight does, I see the same thing here, or I believe I see the same thing here. This is how property standards are lowered for everyone in the area. Any spread of or conversion of and spread of residential housing into multifamily dwellings, which the bylaw doesn't allow for as it stands, I believe it's owner occupation in a granny apartment or towards that effect, is always a bad thing. It never turns into a good thing in my experience. And I've lived in this town all my life. I'm 62 years old. The first question I guess I have to see that if it's been looked at in any fair way is, has the town, the consultant or the owner, actually attempted or shown to obtain any statements from the affected neighbors to say, yeah, we're for this or we're happy for this? It's one thing for the building department or the town to go out and send a notice to the neighbors affected or potentially affected by the move. It's a total other thing to go ask their opinion. Clearly, most people don't want to say a word. They don't want to get involved. They're afraid to get involved. But going door to door for the few houses it would take, or at least a phone survey, and quizzing or querying some reasonable number of affected parties would be reasonable. The way it's handled and traditionally handled, I don't believe is reasonable at all. Anyway, thank you very much.
Yeah, Mr. Gilmore, as you know, that's a matter of provincial legislation. It's the Planning Act, what the Planning Act provides. And so
it doesn't plan for changing the bylaws.
Beg your pardon?
The Planning Act doesn't provide or include provisions to change the bylaws. We as citizens pay large amounts of taxes to maintain the bylaws that exist. We don't pay to have them changed.
Planning Act is the guiding document with respect to zoning and zoning amendments.
I understand that. Why do we have bylaws in Salina Fora prohibiting such actions here? Because the people, if the system works, the people didn't want. They wanted residences. They didn't want commercial development.
So we've had a public meeting right now. This is a public meeting. And
yes,
the public meeting is an opportunity under the Planning Act,
yes,
for individuals affected by this to express their concerns, which is what Ms. Smalden and
both
Ms. LeGros have done.
That. But you know as well as I do, people won't say anything if they're not directly asked. Send somebody a notice in the mail, and that's what the Planning Act provides for. Most of it never gets read or gets thrown in the garbage, or people are afraid to say anything. Because if they do, and it opposes what goes on in the town of Fort Erie, their taxes may change magically. I've had it happen twice. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak in opposition to the application relative to 185 Catherine Street? Yeah, you know what? I'm going to let you do that, and then it'll be the end.
Part of what I was going to say with the thing that I didn't, we do have a number of rental properties, and I know that the citizens are concerned about how the property would look. Being the fact that it's a duplex, we take even more care with our duplexes because we would never rely on tenants to cut the grass in a duplex. They're in better control than our single family homes because we pay someone to go out there regularly and cut the grass and make sure it's taken care of. And we have a company that comes, and then they tell me if there's other things they see around the house. They tell me if they notice garbage. We call the tenants. So we actually have more control over our duplexes than we do our single family homes. So there's very little to worry about is how the house will look.
Assuming that that's correct, that would address the situation as long as you own the property. But once you've sold the property, that's another concern that's been expressed by the people who have spoken, because they don't know what will come next. And the other concern is that
since there are
33 units in this building, that's another concern that's been expressed. I don't know how you would address that. Once you sold the property, it's been sold. Correct?
Well, based on the experience of Mr. Lynchishan, we don't sell anything. Nothing gets sold.
We know that you sell lots of properties.
No, but our rentals, no. But I'm just saying, like, we do our best to look after it while we own it. Nobody can predict the future, but while we own it, we do our best to take care of it.
Thank you very much,
okay,
Ms. Hill.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to speak to council with respect to this application? Sure.
My name is Kathy Lynchishan, and I'm Ed's daughter as well. I actually, my girlfriend, she's one of my best friends. Her sister lives right next door at 187, and they had always thought it was a duplex. I wish I would have had something in writing from them, and they absolutely have no concern about it continuing to be a duplex. I could probably, you know, get something. I apologize. I should have had that, but I didn't think to get something in writing.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else who wishes to speak to council? If not, then I'm going to declare this public meeting closed, and that will then take us to the The second public meeting, which relates to 168 High Street, will follow a similar format. Mr. Kernahan will speak. If the applicant and the applicant's agent wish to address council, they may do that. Then I'll ask for anyone who wishes to speak in support. Finally, anyone who wishes to speak in opposition to the application. Mr. Kernahan, please proceed.
Thank you again, Your Worship. This zoning bylaw amendment application was again received by Jennifer Vita, who is the agent on behalf of the owner, Edlin Titian, of 800547 Ontario Limited, and they're the owner of 168 High Street. The purpose of this proposed zoning bylaw amendment is to permit the conversion of an existing dwelling on the property to a fourplex dwelling. Conversion of this dwelling was completed without a permit in early 2017. Town staff became aware of the illegal apartments within this dwelling in February of 2017. Since that time, the owner has been working towards obtaining the necessary approvals for the apartments within the dwelling. Notification of this public meeting was provided in accordance with the Planning Act by placing an ad in the July 27th, 2017 edition of the Times. In addition, property owners were sent notice on this same date. An aerial photograph of the subject property. The subject property is located in the Fort Erie or South End neighborhood on the west side of High Street, north of Verde Street. This slide shows the surrounding land uses. To the north and south are single detached dwellings. East is High Street and single detached dwellings, and to the west are single detached dwellings and a former fire station. Subject property is designated urban residential in the town's official plan. The official plan permits a full range of dwelling types, including fourplexes and triplexes. Due to the lot size and configuration of the existing building on the lot, the proposed parking area must be provided in the front yard, and limited buffering is possible from the property to the north. The applicant has submitted a landscape plan that includes provisions for buffering as parking from the street. However, planning staff are of the opinion that in order to maintain consistency with the relevant official plan policies for intensification, the zoning bylaw amendment should be limited to permission for a triplex dwelling at this location. The slide demonstrates there are no natural heritage features on the subject property. This slide shows the existing zoning. Existing zoning for the subject property is residential 2, R2 zone, which again permits single detached dwellings and accessory apartments. The proposed dwellings fall under the definition of a fourplex. The zoning bylaw amendment proposes to rezone the subject property to a site-specific RM1 zone that would permit the fourplex dwelling with some site-specific regulations. Site-specific regulations are proposing a reduced lot frontage, a reduced minimum interior side yard, a reduced minimum planting strip adjacent to the R2 zone and parking area, and a reduced minimum width of the ingress and egress to the parking area. An analysis with respect to the appropriateness of these zoning regulations will be included in a future recommendation report to council. The slide shows the site plan for the subject property. The existing dwelling that is proposed to be converted to a fourplex is shown in the central portion. The proposed driveway runs along the north property line, and the parking area is proposed in the front yard between the dwelling and High Street. Landscaping is proposed along the north property line, as well as surrounding the parking area. This is a view of the subject property looking west from High Street. This is a view looking northwest from Verde Street. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Kernahan. Any members of council have any questions? Can you, do you know when... Did you hand up?
Yeah.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Mr. Kernahan, could you just tell me what the sizes are proposed for each of those apartments?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, to the councillor, off the top of my head, I don't have the sizes of those dwellings, but I can confirm that they meet the minimum zoning regulations in terms of floor area.
Okay. Thank you.
Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Mr. Kernahan, right now there's two apartments in there. Is that what you're saying?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Currently there are four apartments in there. At this
four?
Time, two are occupied.
If there's four in there, is he not asking to change the zoning so he can have four, or are we in the same position as we were in Catherine Street?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the position is the same as with Catherine Street. construction was completed in this instance, construction was completed without a permit. In the instance of Catherine Street, it was started.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
So just to follow that up, this at one time was a single family dwelling. Is that your understanding?
That is my understanding.
And are you aware of it being other than a single family dwelling?
Starting at the beginning of 2017, we're aware that it was
when all the extra apartments were constructed.
Right.
And you say that there are two tenants occupying the property right now. Has there ever been more than two tenants, to your knowledge?
There has been, and on two separate occasions, due to some safety concerns, staff requested that those tenants be evicted, and my understanding is that they were. We are in receipt of eviction notices for them.
And any occupancy beyond one family unit would be more than what is permitted by the current zoning?
The current zoning permits an accessory apartment within a single detached dwelling, and the two apartments which are occupied at this time would fall under that definition.
Hence the municipality's permission to have two tenants for the time being.
Correct.
And can you do you have information as to when the various severances were approved that you've referred to in a previous, I guess it's Appendix 1 to the report? As I understand it, there was one parcel and there are now five.
That's correct. The severances were a 2015 file number. As far as when they were finalized, it was in 2015 or 2016.
And that would have been pursuant to an application to the Committee of Adjustments?
That's correct.
And was there any need for any rezoning at that time?
No, those severances were accompanied by applications for minor variances, which were granted. And as a condition of the consent, they were also required to go through a development agreement to address some servicing matters.
So the council had really no role with respect to what's gone on with this parcel of property through work done by the Committee of Adjustments?
As relates to severance and minor variance, that was completed by the Committee of Adjustment.
So the small lots, the three lots now that have been created on Bertie Street, which are about half the size of every other lot in that whole neighborhood, that was done through the Committee of Adjustments?
That's correct.
And in connection with an application of this nature, where there are four units in the building, are there only four parking spaces required?
That's correct, four.
And where would guests park?
On the street.
And when we get to the report, I'll ask you further about the site-specific changes that would be required. Thank you very much. Are there any questions by Council? Councilor Lubertz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Mr. Kernahan, just looking at the slide that's up there, I see two hydrometers. How does that work with a fourplex and 2 meters? Would two units be on the same meter? Is that how that works?
For you, Mr. Mayor, I don't have any knowledge of how they would deal with their electrical.
And the building, looking at this here, the building on the right, that has nothing to do with this property. Is that correct?
That property to the right was also subject to an application for a severance at the same time as the ones along Bertie Street.
Is that a residence?
That's a single-family residence, which is now occupied by the purchaser of that property.
And is that included in the fourplex deal, or is that something separate? The other house is the one with the four units.
The house directly in the frame here to the left of the picture is that's
the only house we're talking about.
To the right is a separate property occupied by a single detached dwelling.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Kernahan. We'll now call on the applicant, the applicant's agent.
Good evening. Again, Jennifer Vita from Upper Canada Consultants. We have submitted applications to amend the Town of Fort Erie zoning bylaw to permit the use of an existing dwelling at 168 High Street for a fourplex. The property subject to tonight's application was part of a larger parcel of land previously known as 111 Bertie Street. The property was an oversized lot within the urban boundary and represented an appropriate infill opportunity. In 2015, the parcel of land was severed to create four new single detached lots, three new lots fronting onto Birdie Street, parts 3, 4, and 5 on the map in front of you, and two lots fronting onto High Street, parts 1 and 2. Part 2 was created as a lot for the existing dwellings. It is my understanding that the owner did some interior renovations to the existing dwelling at 168 High Street to create four dwelling units for rentals. It was determined that this work was not permitted, and the application before you tonight is in order to rectify the issue that was created. Since the determination that the four units were not permitted, I understand my client has evicted tenants to bring the building into compliance. The owner now wishes to seek permission to permit the conversion of the dwelling to a fourplex. The existing dwelling is approximately 2,800 square feet, 1,400 on each floor, and the lot is 950 square meters, which are both quite generous in size in comparison to the existing neighborhood. Larger buildings and lots within the built-up area lend themselves nicely to higher density uses as they can be used to accommodate on the existing property along with parking and landscape areas in a way that will not impact adjacent uses. In order to accommodate the proposed fourplex, adequate parking must be provided on site. The fourplex requires a minimum of four parking spaces on site according to the town's bylaw. The site plan that has been presented before you shows how the four parking spaces can be sited on the property. Even with the four required parking spaces, there is still a generous amount of open space left on the property for the residents' enjoyment. A landscape plan has been prepared, as shown above, to illustrate how dense landscaping will ensure that the parking area will not be visible from the street and how a nice green buffer can be accommodated on the property along the north property line, which will serve as a buffer to hide the parking area from the adjacent lot. At the public meeting, a neighboring resident attended who expressed concerns about the previous development applications and the obligations associated with it. He had concerns about drainage and the development agreement. To address Mr. Gilmore's concerns, I can confirm that the development obligations for the severances and the new lots are secured through a development agreement between the developer and the town. The town is holding securities for the completion of these works. It is true that all of the lots have not been built out to date, and therefore, yes, all of the obligations have not been met yet, but the purpose of the agreement is to ensure that when build-out proceeds, the developer is obligated to implement all of the provisions of the agreement. If this does not happen, the town will draw upon securities that have been posted by the developer. It is my understanding that the houses to the north of the subject lands have been constructed, including final grading and sodding. It is in the process of having the as-built grading completed, which will be reviewed and certified by a professional engineer. The developer is still on the hook until such time as the town staff have reviewed and confirmed that everything is done according to their satisfaction. The application for rezoning represents good planning. It makes efficient use of an oversized urban service lot within the urban boundary. It creates a form of affordable housing within the community, and parking and landscaping, including buffering, can all be accommodated on site, minimizing the impacts on the neighborhood. That concludes my presentation. If you have any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Vita. Do any members of council have any questions?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Thank you very much for your presentation. Just looking at what we were presented earlier, we have all the information from 185 Catherine Street, but I don't see any of the same material for High Street. And I'm just wondering, was there any reason not to submit the stuff from the real estate? Because that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at how it was zoned.
Yeah, the purpose of the information that was submitted for Catherine Street was to demonstrate that the ad and the purchase was based on it being a duplex. In this case, the property was used as a single detached dwelling before.
And that's the way it was sold?
That's the way it was sold, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Ms. Vita, were you on board when the property was acquired and the application for severances was made?
Yes, my firm did those severances as well.
And at that time, was the Committee of Adjustments made aware of what the plans were with respect to this existing house?
No, I was not aware as well. It was my understanding that these would be single detached dwellings.
Including this particular
including
house.
The existing dwelling, yes.
Okay, well, that's helpful to know. And you did mention that the current owner has taken steps to ensure that presently the use of the building complies with the current zoning.
That's correct.
After the current owner had violated the existing zoning bylaw.
That's correct. We're
by
here.
Proceeding to change the internal makeup of the building, number one, and number two, disregard the zoning requirements.
That's correct.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on behalf of the applicant? Please come forward, Ms. Hill.
I don't have that much to say. I was going to say it previously, but I'll just mention what I was going to say about 168 High Street. The existing house is a very large home, and my father, the reason when he saw a vision that the home being retrofitted to accommodate smaller families, as he sees large families something of the past. When completed, as Jennifer's already mentioned, it will be nicely landscaped with paved drive. It'll be very pleasing to the eye. There is currently a large shortage of rental properties in the area of Fort Erie, so the fact that a developer wants to restore an old home and make it look very nice should be something that the community should be happy to see. In fact, there's a fourplex located right across the street, and that is the picture that I included in that package that I'm sure does not up to building current building codes or anywhere near as nice as how our home will look when it's finished. You mentioned about the hydro bills. I didn't include them because just exactly how Jennifer had answered the question, because we were trying to prove that the other one had been a duplex, but they do give us two hydro, if you're in answer to your question, we do have two separate hydro bills for that home, one for the upper floor and one for the lower floor.
Further?
That's all I really wanted to say.
Any questions by members of council? Councillor Lubberts and then Councillor Butler.
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you very much for the clarification. But there's four units. There's two apartments sharing one hydro bill and two apartments
sharing...
Well,
we pay everything anyways. We pay all the utilities, so...
Okay.
So one hydro is sufficient for the upstairs, for the whole upstairs floor.
So both units are on one meter, or on one hydro bill, and downstairs both units are on another hydro bill. Okay, thank you.
Councilor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. So I have a couple of questions for you. When your team came in front of the Committee of Adjustment, did you know at that time that you had plans for that house to be built into an apartment?
To be very truthful with you, my sister and I have just come on board since last May. So the severancing, a lot of this was already completed before we were even on board.
So you came on last May, but your father has been in business for quite some time in the municipality of Fort Erie, and he knows the ins and outs and what's expected from the municipality with respect to building permits. And, I have a problem personally when people have a flagrant disregard for the rules. And coming before the committee and presenting in one manner and then going back and doing something different kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth that you weren't forthright or your father wasn't forthright. So I have a problem right now with you. And yes, I agree with you that apartments are in need, but turning this now into a fourplex. Just wanted to let you know that.
Any other members of council? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. The three lots that front Birdie Streets, are those still controlled by your ownership?
Yes. Well, we haven't completed the servicing of those three lots, but yes, they are.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other councillors? Ms. Hill, the building that you've referred to, the fourplex at the corner of Birdie and High, any idea how long that has been in existence?
It's an old, very old building, so it's you can see that it's been built right from the get-go.
Probably precedes the actual zoning bylaw. You indicated that there is a need for housing, and there's a vision here with respect to the development of this particular parcel. Do you think the neighbors that live in the surrounding area should have some say in what goes on that parcel of property?
For the fourplex? Well, sure, they should have some say.
Because mm-hmm. they live in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And once
but there's
is,
like many, I'm sure there's many other fourplexes in the area. So, like there is in most areas, there's lots of multi-family units in a lot of neighborhoods.
Would agree that the neighbors should have an opportunity to voice their concerns.
Sure.
Good, because I think we're going to hear some.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on behalf of the applicant? Probably not. You have the right to. It's maybe you should listen to your daughter. Even I do that periodically. Is there anyone who wishes to speak in support of the application? For anyone who wishes to speak in opposition to the application, please come forward, Mr. Gilmore.
Again, you want my name and...
If you could, it's a
sure.
separate public meeting.
John Gilmore, 158 High Street, Fort Erie. And I've lived at that address next to this house and subject property before it was destroyed by excessive subdivision or greed-driven development for 62 years. My parents lived in it for years before that, and I knew the people that lived in it as a single-family dwelling, the Gallardo family, when I was a kid. I used to walk their dog for them. It is a historic house built in the 1800s. When that house was built, I don't believe there was any infrastructure in this town in the way of sewer and water. And that house had a well in the backyard, which has been completely ignored. In fact, the current owner is now, instead of pumping the sump water out to the ditch where it's supposed to run, to the storm sewers, pumping it into the backyard, about where that well used to be in my memory of many, many years ago. My brother fell in that well. I had to crawl out once, and he's a little older than me. This house was a historic estate home of the era. The basement and foundation of that building is hand-laid fieldstone, pieces of limestone put together. It gives you an idea on the real date of it. The talk of this being 168 High Street is really quite, I don't know, I find it amusing, because it's been 111 Birdie Street since it was built. Now, I don't quite understand, well, I do understand, or I have my theories on how to understand why it's been changed to confuse people, but that house faces Birdie Street. It was subdivided into five lots, as far as I'm concerned, completely in violation of the Planning Act. The Planning Act specifies, number one, that any subdivision or development shall not be a detriment to the neighborhood. Clearly, turning it into a bunch of undersized lots that the bylaw doesn't support for the purpose of greed-driven development is not an enhancement to the neighborhood whatsoever. Surrounding a historic estate home, which many people in the neighborhood have voiced opinion that they were interested in buying it and fixing it up and living in it as an estate home. It would have been a big job. It's an old house. That's what it should have been. You don't see estate homes along the Parnegger Parkway turned into fourplexes, but they talk about all kinds of fourplexes in the area. The development of three lots on Birdie Street directly in front of this building, it's unheard of. Nobody builds houses in front of another house without a street in between. The lot that exists illegally between my house and this house was also provisioned in that committee of adjustment meeting, detriment to the neighborhood, undersized lots. We pay taxes for the bylaws that we've enjoyed all these years and certain lot sizes. Then they go stick this thing beside me, which you saw in Mr. Kernahan's views. That house is about 8 feet from my garage. It's built of plywood and sticks, same as my house is, and it's covered in flammable plastic siding. Now, if one of my motorcycles or my car or my barbecue happened to catch fire or the neighbors catch fire, that's a fire hazard. It's going to spread from my buildings to their building and God knows where. It's not reasonable. The reason we separated from the early 1900s when we had buildings built tight to each other, greed-driven development, is because of the fire hazards. And now we're doing it all over again. Just take a look at any subdivision we've built. It doesn't have to be the town of Fort Erie. You can see that if one catches fire, they're all going to go. And when shit hits the fan, pardon my language, if it ever does, it will not be good. It reminds me of the situation that happened in Walkerton with the water. Everybody kept pushing the limits and ignoring things and let the system get sloppy until it killed somebody, and then there was hell to pay. I don't want to see that happen again, especially when it involves me personally. After the development the subdivision was done, I was at that agreement or community of adjustment meeting. and the agreement was for the developer to supply all infrastructure. The developer didn't bother to even run the ditch past driveway width 10 feet to meet the sump water of the new house between me and it. They pumped it in the backyard instead. Actually, because that area and the area to the west between that house and the fire hall, the old fire hall, has always been wet. When people have moved in and out of that place, they've often tried to drive moving trucks in there, and they sink to the axles. That's exactly where he's pumping his water. As they were building it, the basement flooded continually. They had pumps and emergency dig-outs. And then they dug up the foundation right where the sanitary sewer connects, and there's been no more problems since then. I would like to see the results of a dye test and see where the sump water really is going. It certainly isn't going out to the ditch. The lot grading on that property is several inches above mine and tapered towards it. I have many pictures through all the development of every time it rained. You can see all the streaks of clay because they stripped off all the topsoil running into my backyard, across my backyard, into that of my neighbors to the north, Matt Littlewoods, and floods his basement, floods my basement. In all the years I've lived there, my parents lived there before me, I've never had basement flooding problems or ant infestation problems like I have in the last couple of years, especially this year. I agree it was a wetter than usual spring, but never have I seen it like this. So the lot grading is wrong, and this is not new. It's not like I've just discovered this, all as it was being done. I mentioned it to the town of Fort Erie bylaw, who then sidestepped it by passing it on to the building department. Building department and the bylaw did nothing. The property we're talking about right here, the old historic house, now on this new modified lot, hasn't had a weed taken down or anything fixed up, or even the garbage cans picked up for days after garbage day since the tenants moved in. And my observation, because I live there and I walk around the streets and drive around the streets, is there's been an average of 5 cars in the driveway every night. And there continues to be. So the developer, as far as I'm concerned, has never shown any indication that he was interested or they were interested in beautifying the neighborhood or doing things on the up and up or properly. And then they go and stuff. However, the Committee of Adjustment did the illegal subdivision. I don't know, but they did. And then after the 1 year had expired, the Planning Act allows for, that has to be complied with, within that, nothing had been done. Notified town and its officials again. Development still continues to this day. So, like I say, I've done everything I can to play by the rules, do my research in the time I have. I still do a little bit of work for a living. And nothing seems to happen, and yet I get billed for taxes thousands of dollars a year. So that's taxation without representation, in my opinion. I see no indication. And Mr. Pizzerro, sort of pick on you. You're supposed to be my counselor, I guess, by default.
Well, Mr.
But
Gilmore,
you haven't responded to anything I said.
Mr. Gilmore,
I got nasty with you. Yes,
Mr.
Sir.
Gilmore,
go ahead.
I've given you a lot of latitude. I know that this is obviously of importance to you because you're living right next door to the one house that was built. So I've given you a lot of latitude on that. But really, this is a public meeting about this specific property. You've made reference to parking and to a site development, to lot grading and that type of thing, and which all of which relate to the decision we have to make.
Fair enough. Thank you, too.
Yes, you may.
Yes, you may. This property, from the start, before the new house was built between it and me, the lot grading was attempted to be changed there. He tore down a shed, a stone, hand-laid stone shed was built on the original house, probably when it was new, and put in a large concrete slab as like a deck or patio off the side towards my side. And then that, when they put in that slab, I thought, why is it so high? It didn't dawn on me that he was going to change the lot grading. And there's perfectly clear evidence to what he did there. Then he raised about 10 inches of soil from that house, that side of the house, directly towards my house, because you can take a look at the original basement window, which I have pictures of before work and after work, and the ground was level to the basement window as it normally is in older houses, and the window's a few inches above the grade. And now the window has to be encased in a standard window encasement because the grading is raised up above the glass or the sill area where it would run in. So I see no indication that this developer has any record of working with the town or within the bylaws. They've already, I believe, the council or committee of adjustment allowed the separation of this into two apartments, and that was to be owner-occupied and a granny apartment. And it's normally allowed 35% for the granny apartment or something, and they fudged it to allow almost 50-50, clearly, as a duplex. And then what does he do? Builds a fourplex. And then he's been renting as a fourplex, and the town knows it, and the town does nothing. Any questions?
Well, just in fairness,
sure.
The Committee of Adjustment didn't approve the granny flat. That's something that the zoning bylaw permits. How it's being interpreted, you may take issue with. I may take issue with that. But the fact is that there have been people evicted from the premise beyond the two tenants. So it's not fair to say that nothing has been done.
Well, it must have been in the last few days.
That could very well be. And you may have more up-to-date information, which may be of benefit to council as we deliberate on this.
As I stand here, the weeds are chest high and have been since the start. So he doesn't care, obviously, about how it looked to the neighborhood. I have a petition which I circulated to council members of council with 25 names on, and I only took 2 hours to do it. Never in my life have I gone looking for signatures, but I did. And I was dazzled by the outrage I found. And I got lots, it was a Sunday morning, I believe, and there were lots of people who didn't answer the door. So the ones that did answer the door, only in the immediate area, they were all very irate about it. Anything else?
Are there any members of council that have any questions of Mr. Gilmore? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Worship. Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Just to clarify, you're my constituent by default. That's how that works.
Bill.
In the emails that you and I have exchanged, and similar to tonight, you haven't really touched on why you believe this property shouldn't be a fourplex. I'm hoping you can expand on that. Even if I know you've made a lot of comments about the developer and their lack of care and how the process has played out. I don't know if you have one, but let's say you did have a developer of choice who you were in favor with and loved how they maintained their properties. If that developer owned this property, would you be in favor of a fourplex? If the answer is no, I'd like to know why.
No, and the answer would be no. Every time you take a big house like that, that was a nice estate house, clearly designed for people that could afford to live in something as such and maintain it, and you remove that and put in a bunch of slum apartments, that's exactly what you get. My neighborhood, I've been there 62 years, like I said, has gradually turned into a slum area. Almost everything in the neighborhood is either a rental or a rental multi-residential dwelling that illegally or legally. It's a property referenced at the corner of High and Bertie on the southwest corner. It was a store. It was Betty Crocker's store, believe it or not, when I was a kid. And one apartment for the owner. I don't know who owns it now, but it's been a bunch of budget apartments ever since. The properties directly up Bertie Street to the west of that are a bunch of duplex little shacks that were at one time owned by people and maintained. They weren't much. They were minimal housing, but they were maintained because the owners lived there and they were done with pride. Since they've been turned into duplexes, probably illegally, they're what you'd expect. So you don't take a historic house that sat on a beautiful lot covered in trees, cut all the trees down, turn it into a bunch of parking spaces for houses that don't fit the bylaws, and call that improvement.
If I could, through your worship, so one more question. If it was not this house in question, because I realize the historical status of it, if this was a vacant lot as it stands now, what would your opinion be of going from single or multi, single residential to multi-residential?
I'd be strictly against it.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Anything else?
Any other counselors? Thank you very much, Mr. Gilmore. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak in opposition to the application? In opposition to the application. Okay. I'm going to declare this public meeting completed. You've all had an opportunity to give us your views and make comments. So I'm going to close this public meeting, and we'll proceed then to the final public meeting, which relates to the proposed new sign bylaw, and that is not pursuant necessarily to the Planning Act. The municipality has chosen to hold a public meeting to get input from the public with respect to proposed changes to the sign bylaw. Good evening, Mr. Jennings.
Good evening, Your Worship. Thank you for this opportunity to have a public meeting. Public meeting is required when the municipality is considering a new bylaw. In this case, it would be under the Municipal Act. The proposed sign bylaw is to increase ease for the public to use the bylaw and understanding some flexibility in sign design, and just to be in line with a little bit more of the new trends that are coming out with the sign methods of construction. For public notice, the newspaper advertisement was done on August 10th in the Times. That meets the mandated requirements, and in addition to that, it was posted on the town's website and put on Facebook as well. So while we're looking at a new sign bylaw, the Municipal Act does allow municipalities to pass bylaws to regulate signage. In June of 2014, the current bylaw was approved at council, but was further amended in 2015. The amendment dealt with fascia signs and sign encroachments, primarily in the downtown core areas. We had some issues with new signage in the downtown core areas that facilitated or required the amendment to the bylaw. As I mentioned before, the current bylaw does not address a lot of the new trends in signage requirements or what's coming forward, and that's why we're proposing a new bylaw. We did consider amendment to the bylaw, but staff felt that would add more confusion and it might be a little bit cleaner just to have a new bylaw. We did use the existing bylaw as the base for the proposed bylaw. Definitions were looked at, and a lot of the changes we've done, the grammatical changes and changes to the definitions, had to do with the reorganization, the restructuring, had to do with title changes for certain staff members. They changed some of the existing definitions just to bring them in line with some of the other bylaws within the town, like the fence bylaw and the town zoning bylaw. And we introduced a few new definitions, including charitable organization, which was previously a non-for-profit or registered charity or organization, driveway triangle definition, flag, pole sign, street line, and third-party signs. One of the first changes is dealing with flag signs. As you can tell from the picture, these are relatively new in the industry. Our current bylaw has no regulations on them. So we are proposing to regulate them, to limit them to a 4 per lot, and we are having a maximum size and height for these signs. Next is the billboard signs. The billboard sign size was the big change here. The current bylaw does regulate billboard signs up to 538 square feet. We're looking at reducing that down to 200 square feet. We looked at the current sign, billboard signs throughout the town. We went back and pulled the original building permit files and found that the existing signs are 10 by 20, 200 square feet. So that's why we thought the 538 square feet was a little excessive, and we wanted to reduce that down. We did add some clarification in the proposed bylaw to deal with engineers' requirements for design and to clarify the V-shaped sign or number of face requirements. We did add provisions as well, or proposed provisions, to prohibit electronic billboard signs. That takes me to electronic signs. Again, we did look at this in great detail, and it got to a point where we actually consulted with a sign manufacturer to talk about what is current availability of sign or electronic methods. They are getting some more LED screens that display. They can actually do video. We looked at other sign bylaws as well. Did change the illumination requirements and looked at things like the transfer rate or refresh rates, and putting regulations in to dim the sign at dusk, between dusk and dawn, instead of the current bylaw regulations where we actually are required to measure a light level 10 meters away from the face of the sign. So to add clarification to make it easier for sign owners to know what the rules and regulations are on that. One of the other changes was to remove the setback requirement from intersections. Currently we have a 90 meter setback from intersections for any kind of, or limit some electronic signs. Staff felt that with the regulating of the refresh rates and how fast things flash, it wouldn't cause a traffic issue, and that is in line with the other municipality bylaws. Currently, our sign bylaw has just ground signs. So we have ground signs from, you know, 0 up to 8 meters in height. One change we're proposing is to introduce a new sign type, which is a pole sign. So the ground signs would be regulated to a maximum of 3 meters or 9 foot 10 in height, and then after the 9 foot 10 in height, they become a pole sign. One of the big reasons for this was to introduce the structural requirements. We're looking at the structural side of it from pole signs. We'd like all pole signs to be designed by a structural engineer, and ground signs over a certain size to have that engineering requirements. We also looked at reducing the size of the ground sign because we have the option now for a pole sign, which would be allowed a larger display area, that the ground sign could be a little bit smaller. Setback requirements were also introduced from property lines and from the street line. And with the introduction of the new pole sign classification, there have been regulations for the pole sign as well. Projecting signs, again, this is our current provision in our bylaw with some minor amendments. The minimum ground clearance was amended just to be in line with the remainder of the bylaw. We had a couple different height restrictions throughout the bylaw, so to uniform things up, we reduced the height clearance. The area of the projecting sign was also decreased from 21 square feet or 2 square meters down to 1 square meter. Staff felt that the previous size of the sign was excessive. And then we did introduce provisions to allow illumination. Currently, any projecting signs are prohibited to be illuminated. Portable signs. This is a large change proposed in this. Our current regulations allow one portable sign per lot. The proposed regulations would increase that to allow two signs per lot. We did increase the sign face size. As you can tell from the picture, there is a topper on top of the sign. Our current sign bylaw does not allow that. It would be considered part of the sign face, and it would exceed our current bylaw. This is something we see more often is with the toppers, or they actually have a side banner as well. So those have been considered, and the size of the sign has been increased to accommodate that. Side yard setbacks have been introduced, and setbacks have been reduced from the residential properties. We have currently a 30-meter setback, and that has been reduced down to 15 meters. Just to, it gives some more options to the sign owners or for the properties where they are having limitation issues due to frontage sizes, et cetera. Portable signs currently have a one-year time frame on their sign permits. Well, they can apply for the permit, and it's good for 1 year. The proposal is to limit the portable signs to a maximum of 30 days. After 30 days, they have to remove the sign, wait 30 days, have 30 days off, and then they can apply for a new sign for another 30 days. The idea behind this is to have the property owners or the businesses invest in a proper ground sign or pole sign. We like the idea of the portable signs for events. They're having a sale or an event where they could advertise. That gives them the 30 days for that advertisement. New signs, there's provision proposed to allow a new business to have a sign up for 3 months to let people know where they are. With this introduction, it would improve the enforcement aspect, so it doesn't get lost in the paperwork from the one-year time frames. And like I said before, it promotes the business to invest into a proper permanent ground sign. Sidewalk signs, been some minor changes here. We introduced a clearance around the sign. Currently, it's a little bit more complicated, and any sign requirements for the sandwich board signs require the Director of Infrastructure's approval. So we've removed that and proposing to say as long as we have a 4-foot clearance around the sign for pedestrian traffic, then that would be acceptable. We did a slight reduction in the size of the sign. It was a mathematical correction in the area calculations, and we modified the wording on the sign provisions for pedestrian and vehicle use versus vehicle traffic. Additional notable changes include changes to the expiry provisions, so additional language has been added for clarification on expiry permits. Prohibitions have been modified. The flashing and animated sign provisions have been changed to reflect the electronic sign provisions for illumination components. Increased allowances for the projection over street lines. Our current bylaw will allow a 1 3/4 projection over a street line, which is the property line, front property line. The issue we've had with that in the past is the construction method. If they do a wall sign, those wall signs are typically 4 inches, so it does not comply. So we've been to variances. So we're proposing a change there. Fascia signs were amended to remove provisions for illumination for commercial and industrial and automotive services near residential. Right now, they are not allowed to be illuminated, but the rest of our commercial areas are. So we thought that was a little bit unfair, so that was proposed to be removed. Traffic directional signs provisions were removed, and that has been changed to an incidental sign definition. And there's some regulations for those. And the notice requirements for contradiction. or if the town has to give a notice to a property owner, that has been reduced from 7 days to 5 days after the date of mailing. Our next steps would be a recommendation report presented to council on September 5th. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jennings. We appreciate the work that you've put in on this. Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Worship. Through you to Mr. Jennings. Thank you very much for the report and the update on the bylaw. With the proposed cannabis laws coming into effect within the next year in the province of Ontario, ultimately undecided yet on how that they're going to allow presentation, have we given any forethought to how we're going to include signage and advertising display of any type of cannabis that would be for sale?
I'm not sure if we can. We may have to talk to legal about that, just because people have a right to advertise, and I don't know if we can regulate what they advertise.
I'm thinking more along the way they do cigarettes now, where it's out of sight, it's not directly advertised. But if you wouldn't mind following up with legal and the CAO and see if there's anything while we're doing the amendments and changes that we need to include in anticipation of that coming into effect in 2018.
I'll look into that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other councillors? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. That was a very good presentation. But I do have a question. I, as a business owner, utilize the portable signs, and so your 30-day on, 30-day off would not work for me. And I don't know how many businesses are out there that actually rent from owners of establishments, and so if they're using portable signs, then that wouldn't work for them as well, just saying. So my question is to you then, as a business owner but not a property owner, what are my options?
Your option would be go to the landlord and apply for a ground sign. Do a permanent ground sign. You can take a portable sign and make it permanently affixed to the ground, complying with the ground sign regulations, and it would be allowed. Because it is different regulations for portable signs versus permanent ground signs.
But, I mean, that sounds like a great idea.
Yep.
But if the property owner says no, then you're kind of euchred, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Any other councillors? Councillor Luberts.
Yes. Thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Thank you very much for your presentation. Just on the billboards, what's the size that's there now? Would you say
538 square feet.
And you want to reduce that to 200 square feet?
Yes.
What do we do with the existing ones? Are we going to tell all these billboard owners that they have to reduce theirs?
The current signs that are in town are 200 square feet. So
all of them?
Yep. Yeah, for the ones we've issued permits on, we reviewed the building permits that were issued, and we made sure that our new sign provisions, the size provisions, will comply with those signs, will comply with our new sign provisions.
So that won't change, probably nothing's going to change there. Okay, thank you. And setbacks for intersections, you say you're going to eliminate the setbacks?
Yes, currently our regulations show a 90-meter setback for electronic signs to an intersection. And this is an issue for a lot of the signs on Garrison Road, because there's a lot of intersections. And that 90-meter provision would eliminate a lot of the electronic signs. Through looking at the other bylaws, no other bylaw that we reviewed addresses that, have any provisions to allow that or to prohibit that from happening.
All right. But they're going to be limited to their building, right? They're not going to be able to have them right at the intersection.
There are setback requirements for the type of sign. So if it's a pole sign versus a ground sign, there would be setback requirements, but they would be allowed a portion of that sign to have an electronic component.
Okay. Thank you very much. And the portable signs, here's where I have a problem. They're allowed for a year now.
Yes.
And you want to reduce that to 30 days. And I understand your thoughts and your staff thinking that this will encourage businesses to have more permanent signs. But on the flip side of that, it looks like we're forcing the business owners to get more permanent signs on their properties. And I understand that, but I talk to a lot of business owners, and they say it's tough out there. It's not an easy task to own your own business and to pay your way. And for for us to go there and say, well, you can put up a sign for 30 days and then you have to take it down, I guess, for 30 days, and then you can apply again for another 30 days. I don't know that I really would agree with that. I would like to try to help them. I wouldn't mind encouraging them after a few years to put up a sign, but over a 30-day period, especially a new business, he comes in, somebody comes into town with a new business, and we all know it takes maybe 3, 4, 5 years before they start seeing some results of their hard work. And then we're telling them, well, you have to put up a new sign as well as doing all your other things and trying to make a profit. And there's where I have a problem with that. I don't know that I would agree with that part.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. We had a lot of complaints last year about the portable signs. And that's what made us look at this a little bit more, was Garrison Road. There was a lot of signs that went up on businesses. We have a lot of businesses or a lot of properties with multiple signs. So if one person has a sign up for that property under the current bylaw, nobody else is allowed. So that property is now sterilized for 1 year. And if they can get their application in before the next guy can, then that sterilizes it for the next person with our current regulations. So at least this way, we're looking at it to say 30 up, 30 off. We've increased the number of signs they're allowed to have, and you can get into a rotation where other businesses have an opportunity to put signage.
But thank you very much. I understand that if you have a piece of property with multiple businesses on it, but if someone owns their own business and their own piece of property, there are 30 days. That's their limit. And I understand what you're saying. So you're only allowed one sign per property. And if you have 4 units on that property, yes, then we have a problem. But one single unit, I don't know that I would agree to that just for 30 days. And I know multiple units, and if I go down Garrison Road and I see lots of multiple units, most of them I see a sign that has all multiple units on the sign, right, with these little mini malls and such. And, yes, I could agree that we might want to encourage the property owner who's leasing this property out to, you know, put up a permanent sign, but I'm going back to the single business owner, single property, and having 30 days. I don't know that I can. I would support that.
Any other questions? To follow up on that, so as I understand it, you believe it's an improvement because there's an opportunity being provided for more than the person who currently has the portable sign. But I'm wondering if we're taking the right view on that. I mean, I'm wondering if there are multiple businesses on a property, shouldn't there an alternative? What about a pole sign that has reference to multiple businesses?
Yep.
Would that fit?
It can. There are provisions for pole signs.
But that's
so
permanent.
Yes.
We'd have to get businesses or the owner of the property to commit to that.
That'd be correct.
So what if you don't allow portable signs at all? Then you're more or less, so you're not prejudicing the individuals who can't put up a portable sign now because have a sign presence whatsoever. You're prejudicing individual businesses that own property. Could make provision for that. If you own the property, or if you run the business and you're the only business, you can have a portable sign. But if it's multiple, I'm just throwing some things out, and I'm not. But I see the problem. You're trying to address an issue, and it may be that the solution might not be any better than the current problem. I had a couple of other questions, though. You're talking about the reducing the distance of the portable signs from the residence lot line from 30 meters to 15 meters. I can't imagine that would be popular among a homeowner who's going to now have a sign that's going to be closer than it is right now with the current bylaw. What's the thinking on that?
The current bylaw requires that 100 or a 30-meter setback, which is almost 100 feet. We have commercial properties that don't have 100 feet of frontage. Therefore, you wouldn't be allowed to have a portable sign. By reducing it down to the roughly 50 feet, if their lot is a little bit larger, they may be able to center a sign.
Okay. So the public should be alerted to that. If you live next door to a commercial property, This may be of interest to you.
They would be allowed a permanent ground sign anyway, or potentially a pole sign, depending on the size of their frontage.
And then, if I might, I may be jumping the gun a little bit here, but you have a number of signs that are defined that relate to subdivisions. There are three separate definitions with respect to these, and not a one of them permits advertising relative to the sale of units within a subdivision, that I can tell.
I believe
unless it's a registered plan of subdivision.
That's correct, once the plan is registered.
And there's a long period of time between draft approval, fulfillment of the various conditions, sometimes many conditions, actual final approval or registration, even final approval and then registration, there's a time lag. What's the rationale for not permitting the advertising of lots within a draft plan, as an example, as opposed to a registered plan? And if you don't feel you want to answer that, would it be more appropriate for Mr. Brady to answer it? Or do you feel you can...
I can answer that. Under the Planning Act, they are required to advertise the proposed development. With that, they have their development sign, which is up during or before the draft plan approval. So they do have an advertisement there to say there is a development coming. Once it is in development stage or has been draft plan approved, we don't know how long that's going to be before it actually gets proposed to get built on. And there's concern about maintenance on, if they put a sign up and it starts to deteriorate, it becomes a potential complaint issue or enforcement issue.
That could very well be. What about the possibility of a time limit?
Good, yeah.
Okay, so someone may speak to that issue, so I'll leave that for the time being. Those are my questions. And Councillor Butler, you wanted to get... Sorry, Councillor Becerra, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Worship. Keegan, let's take one of the plazas as a for instance, the one with Chuck's, the pharmacy, Mark's Work Warehouse. Who makes the application for the portable sign? Is it a business owner or is it the property owner?
The tenant can, with authorization from the owner.
With authorization from the owner. Would it not be more advantageous to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish by making it the property owner, like leaving it at, you can have one sign up, you know, for the calendar year, but it has to be through the property owner and let them worry about how they're going to divvy up the space on the sign? It's going to be this tenant for 2 months, this tenant for 3 months. I mean, I really don't want to get involved in that. Can we give some thought as to how we can maybe do that versus the individual business owner trying to get a leg up on the person who's in the suite next to him?
I think real quick, I just want to clarify the portable ground sign versus permanent ground sign versus pole sign. So if we look at that plaza, for example, they have a pole sign. They have enough frontage there, they may even be allowed two pole signs, and they would also be allowed a permanent ground sign. And then on top of that, we were allowed portable signs. So if we have space for multi-tenants on the ground sign and space for multi-tenants on the pole sign, and then have, I guess, the tenant, yeah, we could do have the property owner apply and sort out who gets the portable signs.
I agree with your thinking, but generally the nature of a portable sign is something that can be updated on a monthly, biweekly, weekly basis, a sale, a new product, something happening, which doesn't necessarily lend itself to a pole sign application. You don't necessarily see too many portable signs that just have the same message for a year, Chuck's Roadhouse, here now. It's daily specials. It's those types of things.
I agree. The only difference that I'm talking about between a portable sign and a permanent ground sign is one's permanently affixed to the ground, the other one's hang down by weights, and it's a little bit easier to move. But that's the only difference. The actual display area and the interchangeable letters, or in this case, they can actually go to electronic, that they could advertise with scrolling marquees, et cetera, that can all be implemented into that permanent ground sign. Or
so if both are pretty much equal, apart from how they're affixed, what's our concern?
That's where I'm trying to promote, to say let's do permanent ground signs, maintenance, don't have to worry about them blowing over the wind, and they have restriction to say how far they can be from other signs. They're a little bit more regulated, knowing okay. that the portable signs are only for that.
So we know
the temporary.
From day one it's installed, we've checked it out, we know it's in the right spot versus
yep.
portable signs, us having to go out every application to inspect.
Correct.
So following that thought process, is it more advantageous for us to do a one-month one-off? Are we not going to have to inspect every other month if a sign is disappearing and coming back?
Yep, we would have to track that for sure.
Okay. Thank you, Your Worship.
Welcome, Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship.
Mine was just a kind of a brainstorming exercise.
No. Listen, those portable signs, I'm going to admit, are the ugliest things ever.
Here.
To allow one group, because they own property, to have those signs and not other businesses is discriminatory in my mind. But let's get rid of them completely, because I think they're ugly too. And why bother going through the exercise of 30 days on, 30 days off? It's disruptive when you can just purchase those plague signs and have four of those and do the exact same things, and they're really quite colorful and pretty. So I'm for getting rid of them completely, to be honest with you.
That coming.
Right?
I agree, but I didn't see it coming. We eliminated the bylaw. Are there any other councillors? Thank you very much, Mr. Jennings. We appreciate the work, and hopefully there's been some information that you've garnered so far. But now we're going to hear from the public and see if there's some further comments.
Okay.
Thank you. On that note, is there anyone here that wishes to address council with respect to the proposed new sign bylaw? I'm going to go to this young lady in a very attractive outfit. Good evening. And could we have your full name?
Hey, Mayor Redica, Council. My name is Danielle Miller, and I'm here to represent Blythewood Homes. And Blythewood Homes and Westwind Niagara Developments are in the advanced stages for the development of a new community. It's at the corner of Thunder Bay Road and Prospect Point Road across from Ridgeray by the lake. It's going to be called the Oaks at Mount Creek. And councillors may recall the name Ridgeway Shores, which is the name previously given the subdivision by Rinaldi Homes. So the zoning and the plan of the subdivision are approved for this site, and we've submitted detailed engineering plans for the roads and services. We're at the stage now where we'd like to advertise the site with a sign and get the pre-sale of homes prior to commencing the service. However, our permit for new sign development was declined because it does not meet the bylaw where the subdivision has to be registered with the province. So we are, Blythewood Homes would like to propose that the bylaw be changed to allow a new development sign when the plan of subdivision has received council approval and not require that it be registered. So we respectfully recommend that the word registered be removed from the county bylaw, or from the bylaw, and suggest replacing with the phrasing has zoning approval.
I think what you want the wording to say is draft plan approval.
Draft plan approval, correct, yes.
Okay. Before you go, any members of council have any questions? Your comments supplement the letter that's been circulated to members of council. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for your comments and your input. Anyone else in that group at the back there? Then I'm going to go with Mr. Gilmore. You wanted to address this as well. And again, this is a third public meeting, so you have to give us your name and address.
Good evening, everyone. John Gilmore, 158 High Street, Fort Erie. Just a quick question. Like to know what the proposed or the fee structure is for covering all of this, if there is any, in fact, fees to West approval.
There are fees, and there is a current fee structure, and as I understand it, and Mr. Jennings can correct this, there's only one change that's being proposed with respect to the fee structure, and is that a reduction?
Right. Reduced fee back every other month, that is a reduced fee for that.
All right, but that's probably not... Just gauging what we're talking about, that may not happen. But there are currently fees payable with respect to various signs, and that is available someplace on our website, and those aren't going to change, apparently.
Back the portable signs.
Can you step forward to the closer to the mic, please?
The reduced fee structure for the portable signs, if in fact that stays, you reduce the fees proportionally, 1/12?
Collective of the time... staff time and cost to do that review.
Apple.
Well, it's proposed, I think we're looking at it around $50, a flat fee of $50 to cover an hour or so's work to cover review the portable sign. If it's a repeat portable sign, they're easier to review.
Okay, thank you very much. And I do understand one more thing and I'll get out of your hair.
Sure.
Bothers me, this fee structure. When I was younger, when we were all younger, We paid taxes, and we had services provided by the municipality, local government, at every level and every bit of government we had because of those taxes. Now we have huge taxes. Commercial people pay outrageous taxes, and especially in this municipality. And we have user fees on top of that. We used to have water and sewer provided in the tax fee. Now there's water, and now there's sewer, and there's user fees for everything. User fees should really, they need to be reconsidered. This is not a money grab for the public servants or the municipalities. Taxes are supposed to be about services provided, not what you can afford to pay.
So you're quite a way off of the signed bylaw.
Yeah, but it comes to the cost of the signed bylaw that
It
basically is an increase in revenue for the town.
So years ago, people made $3 an hour, and you know wages were a lot less. The regulations that the municipalities were required to implement as passed down by the province were significantly less than they are now. And so it's not just Fort Erie. I mean,
I know
everybody charges these. But we are limited in what we can charge in terms of fees of this nature by reasonable cost recovery. So when Mr. Jennings talks about $50 for spending an hour to review an application, check out the location of the site, that's basically cost recovery, and that's what the province permits. So we can't charge more than that. And in terms of water and sewer, we're mandated and have been for probably 25 years to separate water and sewer charges from the general tax levy, because it's deemed to be a separate system which should be self-funding. And there's some other things, and maybe we should have a coffee someday and chat about those things.
It's convenient for the municipalities to be able to charge from both ends of the equation. It's just not right. So I'll leave it at that. But like I say, I wish council would consider the effect of levying fees, which this town has no end to, on everything that comes along that might produce good development.
So, you know, Mr. Gilmore, you can walk along the Friendship Trail, that's free.
Yep.
You can go through any of the parks that we have, that's free. You can even go to Bay Beach on a hot summer day along with 7,000 of your closest acquaintances, and that's free.
That's
so
right.
There are lots of things that are free, but that's we're a long distance from the signed bylaw.
Okay, but taxes, just to correct one thing, if I may, and I will leave. Taxes have always been indexed to inflation.
No, there's no rule that says that.
Well, it is, because your property, your mill rate, whatever that happens to be, is based on the property value, which changes as markets change. So taxes are automatically indexed, and yet the percentage, the mill rate, goes up almost every year. The long-term average is increased.
Well, again, that's a whole different topic, and it's not related to the signed bylaw.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to address council with respect to the new proposed signed bylaw? If not, then I'm going to declare this public meeting closed, and that's going to take us to the consent agenda. And I would ask that PDS 51-2017 be dealt with separately because of a conflict that I have. And before we move further, Councillor Nutt, did you determine that you may have a conflict with respect to a report that we're going to be dealing with at some point?
Yes, Your Worship. My apologies for not stating it earlier. And that would be under...
And under infrastructure services?
Yes. IS-26-2017. I'd like to declare a conflict. I just had I had sought a legal opinion on the proposed awarding of that contract to SNC-Lavalin Inc. And the company I work for right now is doing a joint venture for City of Toronto bid. And I don't think it appropriate that I vote
okay
on this, so I want to declare a conflict of interest.
That's fine. So that's a perceived that's a perceived conflict based on the relationship between your employer and SNC-Lavalin.
Correct.
Okay. Got that, Madam Clerk? Okay. Somebody like to move the consent agenda items except PDS 51-2017, Councillor Butler. Are there any questions with respect to those items in the consent agenda? Councillor Butler and then Councillor Luberts.
Thank you, Your Worship. I have a question with respect to the CAO-07, the Land Committee minutes under new business. First of all, it's number two, request for donation of land. The Fort Erie Native Friendship Center, 6 acres for transitional housing and you're looking at DSBN may be vacated as a solution. I fully support that if that's the case. But my question is, does the town have the first right of purchase for DSBN property? Just looking for some clarification.
Mr. Brady, can you respond to that?
Yes, through you, to the councillor. DSBN will ask us if we have an interest in purchasing a property which they've declared surplus. If we show an interest, then we would move forward in terms of a negotiation for the price, and typically DSBN would want the market value.
And that's part of council's decision as to show interest in those parcels as well, correct?
When we're asked.
Oh, so we as council have to be asked. We can't say that.
We don't have to be asked. I suppose we could approach the school board and indicate that we're interested.
It would be best if council had an interest in any of those properties to let staff know that, so that when we're asked about that, we could indicate that that should come back to council for consideration.
Okay. The reason that I ask is because I have been speaking with some nonprofit organizations and charity organizations who want to organize a consortium of a public-private kind of venture for opportunities with some of those DSBN properties with respect to putting together a proposal for senior living because there's a shortage for independent living for seniors. So that's why I was asking, and so my intent is to, yes, please, and I don't know if the other councillors are fully supportive of that, but I'd be interested in taking a look at the DSBN surpluses to find out if it's sustainable for this group to get together and do something with the municipality.
That's terrific. There's the, from my knowledge, there will be five properties that would likely become declared surplus by them, and I'm speculating to a certain degree. The two elementary schools in Ridgeway Crystal Beach area and the high school in the Ridgeway area, the high school FES and the elementary school beside FES. So if there is an interest in any or one of those properties, I think it would be helpful if we had a discussion on that.
Great. And also there are a group of interested nonprofits that are organizing as well to combat homelessness and are interested in one of those properties as well. So I can speak to you about those particular ones afterwards.
Certainly speak to me or to the CIO.
Thank you.
Councilor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just a couple questions, just a couple quick ones, but one before I forget is a typo error on PDS 50-2017. I think in the blue font, it should read Ridgeway Road, limited marketability. That's
right.
Labeled as Ridge Road, just...
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. And reading... The Land Committee minutes. Under Crystal Beach Hill Cottage Association, it's noted there that the planning staff has realized that the town owns more land than they thought. And I'm just wondering, maybe not tonight, but later, if I could get some details as to how much property we own and where the property is.
We can answer that this evening, I think.
I can roughly give you that. A portion of the road allowance is wider than we had thought it was, and that provides us with an opportunity to put a sidewalk on that. But there's a small piece that isn't wide enough, and we still need to have a lease, and hopefully at some point in time in the future, a donation from the Cottage Association for that property.
Okay, thank you. And IS 25-2017. The award of tender for the Waverly Beach sidewalk. I was speaking with Albert Garofalo, and he's the botanist that's doing the planting of seagrasses and dune grasses along Waverly Beach. And in the grant funding that he received, he worked with the high school students to make little side sidewalks, I guess, or extensions off of the boardwalk to get down onto the beach. And he asked if I would request that before any construction begins, that we remove those pieces off of the, so they don't get damaged in construction. And then he's wondering if they will be replaced.
It would make eminent sense and they should be replaced. Mr. Cookett, you'll take care of that?
I definitely will.
Anything further, Councilor?
Okay, thank you. No, that's all. Thank you.
Anyone, before I go back to Councilor Butler, Councilor Passero?
Thank you, Your Worship. I just wanted to supplement Mr. Brady's answer. I know he deals with it every day, so he probably just thinks it's implied. But we will be asked regarding DSBM surplus property after the coterminous board. So the Catholic board will be asked first, and then any upper tier municipality, so in our case the region, would be asked after that, and then it would come to us for right of refusal before it would be put onto the open markets. And I like your thoughts as to what you stated, so we should chat afterwards because I have some thoughts you might want to consider. Thank you, Your Worship.
Okay, any other councillors before I go back to Councillor Butler? Councillor Butler.
Thank you. I forgot I had some other things written down here, but going to CS-16-2017, I wanted to tell Mr. Jansen that I commend Keith Rothney on a well-written health and safety policy. I also wanted to give a big shout out to all the employees who participated in the Workplace Safety Insurance Board audit and congratulate everyone for successfully passing the audit. Lastly, I wanted to express to Mr. Walsh how impressed I continue to be with the team in infrastructure services because I attended my first committee meeting with that department. And Mr. Stevanovich noted that during the audit, the points were lower than that they had hoped, and for the contractor purchasing program with respect to health and safety, and they were working to strengthen that. So way to go to be a proactive team. So if you can pass that along, that would be great. And CS-17-2017, again, by Randy Martin, that was well written, but part one of the policy framework, 1.1C, should it say maximize rather than maximum? Yes? Okay. And then CS-18-2017, write-off municipal taxes. I'm in support of the report, but I just have a couple of questions and wondered if you could tell me what the history of that property actually was, who owned it, and why it became abandoned.
Mr. Jansen?
Yeah, this property has been brought forward to Land Committee on a number of past occasions, and the history is that we have a failed tax sale from 2016, and we typically wouldn't get into too many details in terms of ownership details, but this report allows the town to advertise the property for sale again within the 2 years following the first failed tax sale. So it is a property that the town has reviewed closely and received an appraisal for in terms of coming up with a basis for moving forward with it.
Okay, and through you, Your Worship, to Mr. Jansen. So we've been collecting, or we've been, that property actually has been in tax arrears since 2004 or earlier than that?
Yes, 2004.
Okay, and what does, when I do the calculation with respect to the town penalty and the interest and what that comprised of, if you take 2004 and the total taxes are 37, then the penalty and the interest represent 62% markup. So I'm just wondering, why so high?
Jansen?
So the question is why the penalty interest would be high in relation to the actual arrears. Those would continue to grow on accumulative balances. So depending on how much would have been in arrears in 2004, despite the fact that at this point there could be a lower arrears balance for that year, that's probably what would have resulted in a higher interest related to that year.
And one last thing, Your Worship, to Mr. Jansen, just for clarification to the general public, the reason that we have penalties and interest in place when taxes go into arrears is to prevent others from using us as a bank. Is that correct?
Mr. Jansen?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
For anyone else who has any questions? Mr. Jansen, I had some questions with respect to CS-15, which is the investment annual investment report. And first, have we ever utilized the services of a professional fund manager with respect to the money that we have in reserves, et cetera?
If you could just clarify, professional fund manager, is that the provincial body that you might be referring to, or a professional fund manager?
Yeah.
No, we have not.
So I know that we would have one for the, I mean, the one program would be presumably managed by professionals, but the overall portfolio that we have, that's done completely by staff other than what goes into one program.
Yeah, you're quite right. That is something that as the portfolio does grow, we will be considering other options. The municipal act is somewhat restrictive in terms of the types of products we can invest in. So to keep our costs low relative to the available gains we can see, we until now we have managed that internally, but we do rely on submitted quotes from a number of different financial institutions that do give us advice from time to time.
And I note that we have money invested with a lot of banks. Would it be, I mean, one would think intuitively, particularly with respect to bank accounts, you might get a better rate of interest with large sums of money if you had fewer banks and larger sums on deposit. Does it work that way, apparently, or does it not?
Our investment policy requires us each time we place an investment to get a minimum of three quotes. So at any given point when we're looking to invest, we do reach out to more than a few contacts that we have to try and get the best rate. So that's why you'll find a number of different placements with different banks as at any given point some banks will offer higher rates than others. So that is in an effort to have the best rate.
Okay, and on CS-16, which is the amended health and safety policy, there was a reference in the report to some additional wording with respect to workers signing off, and it made specific reference to Section 7.8, but I didn't see anything in 7.8 that related to workers signing off anything. I see. Okay. Thank you. Overlooked that. And with respect to CS-17, which is the purchasing policy changes, what's the current situation now if a contractor doesn't comply with, as an example, WSIB requirements?
I'm not certain. I don't believe we have anything in our policy to allow us to disqualify or to change the process, but Tom, did you have other comment?
Our policy states that you must have a clear WSIB clearance certificate to bid on our projects. We have nothing that regulates contractor safety at this point. This is one way to pre-qualify contractors to ensure that the ones that we do hire are compliant, safe, to reduce our risk wherever possible. So we will monitor them throughout the project and then do a post meeting with them on their safety procedures and qualifications just to build a case against those contractors who are not working safely to protect their workers and our residents.
And once pre-qualified, would they be required periodically to, again, show renewed credentials or qualifications?
Absolutely, yes.
I had one further question with respect to 15. It's on page 18 of the package, but it's section 15.1B, where it says proof qualification may be considered, and it doesn't seem to flow. I don't know whether there's a word missing.
There is a small if at the end of that line.
Okay. Thank you. I need new glasses. Thank you. Any other questions by members of council? If not, then I'll call the question on the amended consent agenda package. All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. Councillor McDermott, could I hand the chair to you to deal then with PDS 51 for 2017, please?
Yes, Worship. Can I get a mover for PDS 51-2017? Thank you.
Are there any comments or questions? Seeing none, all in favor? Carried. Back to you, Your Worship.
Thank you very much, Councilor McDermott. That then takes us to Planning and Development Services, and I believe Councilor Ciro is the chair.
Thank you, Your Worship. Planning and Development Services is now in session. We'll begin with report PDS 52-2017, looking for a mover for the following motion: that proposed zoning bylaw amendment 185 Catherine Street, Jennifer Vita, Upper Canada Consultants, as the agents for 800-547 Ontario Limited and Ledcition owner. A mover? Moved by Councillor Butler. So that report is now on the floor, and I just want to bring everyone's attention to the fact that as it stands now, this is not following our traditional process where we would receive this for information after a public meeting and then proceed to a recommendation report. Staff are asking us to do everything in one swoop this evening. So that's as it currently stands. Comments or questions? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Chair Ciro. My comments are this. I understand that the family has just recently taken over as of May of this year, correct? And my last year. So I understand that they purchased this house in good faith. It was already a duplex. He went in there. Thankfully, they came and made a presentation, and it was confirmed by Mr. Kernahan that that it was purchased in good faith. It was already orchestrated to be a duplex. I have no problem supporting this particular one going forward. So I'll leave my comments for the next one.
Thank you, Councillor Butler. Councillor Lubritz.
Yes, thank you very much. Mr. Chair, just looking at the report and looking at the information that was provided by the daughters of Mr. Ledcition, in the listing from the realtor, it clearly states that it's R2 zoning. And the problem that I see with this whole thing is it's a combination of everybody involved not doing due diligence, I guess you could say, because it's my understanding when you purchase a piece of property, you hire your lawyer to do a title search, and you're expecting your lawyer to do everything there, and it's zoned R2, which is single residential, and yet right below that, it shows that there's two different units. And I would think that a lawyer would raise a red flag when he sees something like that and bring it to the attention to the purchaser. Obviously, that wasn't done. And again, everybody knows buyer beware. We have to look and we have to do our homework and make sure that what we're purchasing is what we're getting. And again, that didn't happen. I'm even wondering if the realtor would have noticed something like that and not brought that to the attention to the seller, that you're not zoned properly to have these things. And maybe the seller could have came and had it rezoned first, and then the purchaser could have purchased it then. So there's a combination of everything. And I know myself, if I purchase something that, even if I have a receipt and it turns out to be illegal that I own it, it's still illegal that I own it. And now we have to go forward with fixing everybody else's mistakes, it looks like. And I'm just wondering, I don't know if we could recommend to the realtors in town that they take a close look at the homes that are being purchased. I mean, we have two of them here tonight. And maybe they're afraid to say something because they might lose a sale or lose a listing or something. I don't know what the problem is, but we're dealing with two of them this evening. This one here, I'm looking at the report that we have in front of us, and all the houses in the neighborhood are single residential. And when you look at policies that we have in place, you know, we're supposed to, intensification is there. but intensification is there for infill development, as it states in the regional plan. And this is an infill. This is an existing home that someone converted in a single dwelling neighborhood. And we're being asked tonight with a public meeting, and then immediately following that public meeting, make our decision. And I don't know if I'm willing to make that decision right now. And I'd like to defer this so that we could have further discussions, maybe with legal department, have further discussion with realtors, further discussion as to how we can go about handling this legally. I think there's a whole lot of other people that are responsible to answer to this situation, and I don't know that it's our position at this time to fix it without any answers or any other further information other than what was provided tonight.
So let me take one pause before you officially put that deferral motion forward, if I could, Councillor Lubberts. I just want to get some direction from the clerk, and we could accomplish what you're asking for by more time by possibly amending what's before us to just receive this for information purposes subsequent to an upcoming recommendation report, which would kind of mirror what we generally do. I just want to see if that would be in line through either the clerk or the director of community services. How can we buy us some more time here, Mr. Brady or Ms. Schofield?
Through you, Mr. Chair, we could amend, council could move to amend the recommendation so it's received for information purposes rather than to approve. Someone want to move that.
Yeah, so that is available to you, Councillor Lubberts, if you'd like to do that.
I would like to put that amendment forward. Yeah, so we change it to receive it for information at this time.
Okay. So that amendment is on the floor. Comments or questions to the amendment to receive this for information, and then we would... By default, Madam Clerk, would we then just expect a recommendation report in the future, or is that a question best served to Mr. Brady?
If Council received this report as a report for information, I would like some direction on when they would like us to bring back a recommendation report, or if they don't want us to bring back a recommendation report. Typically, we would bring back a recommendation report at the next meeting, which would be in September. But quite honestly, based on what I've heard this evening, I don't think this report would change much.
Mayor Redekamp?
Well, I can understand why it might not change much because the staff's already given us the recommendation. But I think what I'd be interested in knowing is what kind of processes was the town involved in at the time this property was purchased. In other words, Councillor Lubberts is quite correct. Usually, the lawyer representing the purchaser will do some due diligence, and that due diligence will at least determine whether or not the property is properly zoned, and if it's not, if it's being used other than its apparent zoning, there would be an inquiry as to whether or not there's a pre-existing, a non-conforming use, so that... there may have been a request made of the municipality for that type of information. That's the kind of information that I think could come forth coming between now and when we would deal with this in September. In terms of anything further than that, we've heard information from the purchaser, we've heard information from the neighbors, and we've heard staff's recommendation, but I do think that there would be some information that we would have here that in the town that could perhaps give us some further assurance as to whether or not everything is as it appears. I'd be supportive of putting this over until the first council and committee meeting in September.
Councillor Lubberts, would you like to attach something to your amendment that we
request staff for an additional? No, I just wanted to make one further comment as to just to follow up with what Mayor Redekop was saying is. In the report, or until that time, I could make some inquiries with some people that work with real estate and find out, you know, what is their obligation as a realtor and a real estate as a sales representative when they notice something like this, or if something comes forward like that, are they not obligated to notify and let sellers or buyers. I mean, there has to be some kind of disclosure policy
as they have. As counselors, we're able to do our own due diligence on our own time, but what we're driving at is there anything you'd like to see from staff prior to when this comes back?
No, but that's another reason why I would like this here just to be received for information so that when, till that time comes before we pass this, I'd like to know what their real estate's obligations okay. are.
So if there's no further comments or questions regarding the amendment, let's deal with the amendment first that we'll receive this for information purposes. We'll get that back on the floor. And if a member of council would like to tack on anything else, we'll do that next. So the current amendment is on the floor that we receive this report for information purposes only. Votes to the amendment, all in favor? Opposed? So that's carried. So as of right now, this report is for information purposes only. If no member of council wants to do anything extra, then it will just kind of linger until a member of council wants to bring this back in some way, shape, or form. Mayor Redicott?
Yeah, I'd like to move that staff provide us with whatever additional information they can in terms of whether inquiries were made of the municipality regarding the status of this property prior to its purchase or transfer of title last October, and bring back a report first week of September or recommendation.
Okay, so Mayor Redicott's amendment is a recommendation report be brought back for the first meeting of September. Comments or questions to that amendment? Seeing none, all in favor? That's carried. So before us right now is we received tonight for information purposes, and it comes back with additional information through a recommendation report, first meeting in September. Comments or questions to any of that? Seeing none, all in favor? That's carried. We'll move on to PDS 53-2017, looking for a mover for the motion that proposed zoning bylaw amendment 168 High Street, Jennifer Vita, Upper Canada Consultants, as the agent for 800-547 Ontario Limited, Ed Lincition as the owner. Councillor McDermott moves that. Comments or questions regarding PDS 53-2017? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Chair Passero. This is the report that I have trouble with. I know Mr. Lachushin is a really good builder. I've seen some of his homes. They're really nice. I have no doubt that his ideas for this development is going to be a nice one as well. I do understand that Niagara's objective as pushed by the Ontario government is to have urban intensification, but sometimes I have to ask myself at what cost. Some of the things that bother me about this is that regardless of whether or not he's a great developer, he changed his mind after presenting one scenario to the Committee of Adjustment. So that kind of sticks with me. The other thing too is that he disregarded the development rules and decided to go ahead and develop a fourplex even though he didn't receive that permission. And sometimes, you know, I would be more forgiving if he wasn't aware of the bylaws, but being a developer for many years, kind of euchres him there. So can't forgive him for that. The other thing that bothers me is that it's alleged in this report that there may have been a health and safety concern with some tenants being there that shouldn't have been in there. So that to me is concerning as well. I in good faith can't see a fourplex being built there. I would be in agreement to a duplex, but a fourplex I'm against.
Thank you, Councillor Butler. Further comments or questions? Councillor Luberts, and then Mayor Redicott.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think we're looking at the same situation here, but the home was already a multi-unit home before Mr. Lachushin bought it.
This home was not. This single family with the option for an accessory dwelling, yeah. This is not similar to the previous one.
All right, okay. And then I misunderstood the answer that I got earlier. I thought that they purchased
There were multiple people living there, but that was not for proper zoning. Councillor Nutt?
Pardon me?
Thank you. Just Councillor Luberts did ask Mr. Kernahan what the zoning did allow for, and I believe Mr. Kernahan's still here, and he did state earlier that single-family dwelling, it also allowed under the current zoning before he requested the zoning change for an in-law apartment or a nanny apartment, granny flat, something granny flat. Like that. Could you just clarify that point? Because I think that's what Councillor Lubritz is referring to.
Yeah, Chair to Councillor Lubritz, in the R2 zone, a single detached dwelling is permitted, and within that single detached dwelling, you're permitted to have one accessory apartment that's 40% the size of the dwelling. However, my understanding is that this dwelling in particular wasn't used in that fashion. It was used as a single detached dwelling for one family, traditionally and up until.
Well, my questioning earlier was it was being used as a, there was four apartments there, and that's how they purchased it, as a single unit dwelling.
No, it was single residential, and at the after the
they
purchase by the current owners, then
okay,
more people
all right,
moved
all
in.
Right. And I was, I misinterpreted what was being said. All right.
Anything further,
that's
Councilor?
Fine. No, no.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay. Mayor Redekop.
Thank you. I'm wondering if it's possible for Council to receive copies of the material that was filed with the Committee of Adjustments with respect to the severance and minor variance applications.
Mr. Brady?
Certainly, we can provide that to Council.
And
Mayor Redekop, would you like that in advance of the recommendation report coming forward, or
yes,
as
please.
Part of the recommendation?
No, I would like it beforehand, and it doesn't have to be part of the report, but I think it would be might be instructional for us to take a look at what was put in there, what was presented, and what staff's position was relative to what they understood was going to be the long term here. Five residences is different than four residences and a fourplex. So that's maybe there's nothing there, but I'd like to see if I could. In a situation where there is a violation of the zoning bylaw, is it possible for the municipality to charge the violator?
Mr. Brady, what are current penalties, if any, associated with somebody who gets a head start on a process?
Certainly. If someone is in violation of the zoning on the property, the municipality, what we tend to do is we try to work with them to try to bring them into conformity, if at all possible, through a variety of methods. But if all of those fail, yes, we can charge the individual and go to court, and usually we'll be in front of a justice of the peace to deal with the matter.
Has that happened in this particular instance?
It has not.
Is there a reason why?
Reason is that we try not to use legal methods because they're extremely expensive and very time-consuming for both staff. And in this particular case, we believe that there was an application coming forward, and we would deal with it as part of the application. If council turns down this application in its totality, and they continue to use it in a matter that's illegal, then we would charge them.
So I smiled when Mr. Brady, when you said that town tends not to use legal matters. This process is, the Planning Act is a legal document, and I suppose that I would be somewhat sympathetic to the notion that we want to work with residents, because we do that all the time. We frequently have to work with residents who have perhaps inadvertently or accidentally fallen afoul of some of our bylaws and regulations. And we assure people that we're not trying to prevent them from enjoying their property. But I've got to say, and I'll say this directly to the family members, this is the third time within a year that we've been faced with having to deal with something that's come from Park Lane Homes. And they're not, maybe the one can be excused, the one on Catherine Street, but two of them are what I would consider to be fairly substantial violations of our rules and regulations by a very experienced developer. There may be health issues, I understand that. But you know what? That's cold comfort for the residents who are faced with having to deal with the fallout. And so this particular application causes me a lot of concern. And I'll be honest, I'm not particularly sympathetic to this particular application. I'm not going to make up my mind this evening because this is for information purposes. I'm going to keep an open mind on this, but I am not particularly happy about this. I can understand why residents in the neighborhood would not be happy about this. It not only interferes with their ability to enjoy their property, but it makes the municipality look bad. It makes us look bad because we're trying to make sure that there's a level playing field for everyone. And this doesn't look like a level playing field to me. And so we have obligations, and I think when there are circumstances that arise that are out of the ordinary, that are extraordinary, and this is one of them, I do believe that the municipality should have laid a charge with respect to this. I do know that there are some penalties with respect to obtaining a building permit after construction has commenced. I wonder if we could be reminded of that, Chair.
Mr. Brady, what is the percentage increase that we tack on to building or other building permit fees or other charges when it's caught after the fact?
If a building is constructed or a portion of it is constructed without a building permit, and then and we catch the individual, and then we have a building permit issued, the fee is doubled.
Never to come.
And then finally, or maybe not finally, but maybe finally, is there still site rules that the municipality is engaged in terms of 162 High Street, which is a new home immediately to the north?
Mr. Brady?
The municipality continues to hold securities for the severed parcels because they're not all completed as of yet.
And I guess just for clarification, that actually was the fourth piece of property that caused some anguish here because there were some things being done during construction that were completely inappropriate. Not only were they inappropriate, but they cost municipality money when treated water was put into our sanitary sewer. And that was going on. So there were a number of things that were happening in this particular locale. And I'm not going to say anything further. I will keep an open mind on this, but I think I can tell you that I won't be approving a fourplex. I'm not even likely to approve a threeplex. So I'm into whether it should be a duplex or whether I would just turn this down completely. Keeping an open mind on that. Thank you.
I do have a question for you, if you'd like to come to the podium, and it's a question I don't believe came up earlier. The staff, and it was mentioned in the report, that staff are advocating at the maximum that it be a triplex, and I don't know if any of your comments you address that. Is this fourplex or nothing from your perspective, or are you looking at triplex or duplex as possible options?
Yes. Yeah, triplex would be great. It would be that would be fine with us.
Okay. Thank you.
Not
very much.
My dad. And I just want to say something.
I'll give you the latitude to say something because I know it's an emotional issue. Normally we would not, but if you could do it in a minute or so,
okay.
We'd appreciate it.
I didn't get to say everything that I wanted because my dad's here. What you need to know is that he has dementia. His judgment is not the same. When Kathy and I came on board a year ago, we had no control of legal control. We now have some legal control. So you have to know that what we're saying is, like, when I made the comment before that this would not be happening, you have our word. You have no idea what we go through on a day-to-day basis. And if any of you have ever had a family member with dementia, you'll know what I'm talking about.
We sympathize and we appreciate your time.
I understand that he made a mistake. I'm not disputing that. But we had very little control when we walked in a year ago to this business. It was an absolute mess. We had people in there that literally tried to destroy the company. So we've spent months and months trying to put everything back together, and we're doing a damn good job.
Thank you very much.
But we don't want to. It's been hard to actually admit to the public that our dad has a problem. But now that we're all here and the people that I want to hear that, you're the people I want to know that. And you were not in it. Kathy and I are nothing about trying to do things illegal. We have our own income properties. We do everything by the book. And that's what we're all about. But I just couldn't say everything I wanted to say because my dad was here. And we had encouraged him not to come, but he was emphatic that he'd come tonight. So I need you to know that.
Thank you for those words. Okay. And I don't think any member of council is looking to punish, given the circumstances, but we also have to look at this, that if this was just coming to us under all the right pretenses, is this a property that we would want to be a fourplex? And that's really what it comes down to. So your words are well taken, but we're not looking to punish, and we're definitely just looking at this, the situation on hand.
I just want everybody to understand why he has done what he has done. 5 or 10 years ago, I don't believe he would have done what he's done in the last couple of years. And that's my point. He's not the same. His judgment is not the same. And that's all I can say is now going forward, at least Kathy and I have some control legally to be able to stop him from purchasing things that we don't think is right. We have more control.
Thank you.
We didn't have that 6 months ago.
Thank you for the extra information. Member Decomp, you still have the floor.
I'm fine. It's as Councillor Pizzurro said, this isn't personal, but we have an obligation to the entire neighborhood and community. And your father did have some professionals working with him. Thank you.
Anyone else would like to speak before I go back to Councillor Lubberts for a second time? No, Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just going back. As far as making the changes to the zoning, I just got to go back a couple years as to what has happened with the staff and the council of the day. And one instance was the there was a small golf course, 3-4 hole golf course on Garrison Road. Now it's just a driving range, and they were operating the golf course outside of their zoning, and staff would not rezone so that they could continue with the golf course. The same thing happened further down Garrison Road to Birdie Golf Carts. They were operating their golf cart business, and the zoning wasn't proper. That zoning wasn't changed to accommodate them for their mistakes. And so, in all fairness, I think we have to look at what we've done in the past, and we need to be consistent. And if we didn't afford those people the rezoning so that they could continue on with their business, I don't know that we can be rezoning this property so that these people can continue on with the fourplex. It was zoned that way, and we don't change zoning for other people. I don't know that we should change the zoning for these people as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Lubberts. Opportunity for anyone else to jump in again before I go back to the mayor? No? Mayor Redicom?
Just a couple of comments. Number one, I don't know about the golf course on Garrison Road, but I know that Birdie Golf Cart didn't apply for a rezoning amendment. That was an option made available to them. The owner didn't. So there was nothing turned down at that particular point. But I did want a clarification. When we get the recommendation report back, I would appreciate it if we could have clear understanding of what the variances will be with respect to the various things that Mr. Kerner had made reference to in terms of side yard setbacks and that type of thing. I think it'd be helpful if we had an understanding of exactly how much we're accommodating, and that coupled with the information we're going to get relative to the applications to the Committee of Adjustments and their decisions will show us exactly how much change is taking place or being proposed to take place at this site.
Thank you. We're comfortable that will all be included in the recommendation report.
Mr. Chair, certainly we'll include a draft bylaw and some analysis on those site-specific regulations that are being requested.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor Decomp. Seeing nothing further, and once again, this is being received for information purposes with the recommendation report forthcoming. All in favor? That is carried. Brings us to PDS 54-2017, looking for a mover for the following recommendation: that Council receives report number PDS 54-2017 and proposed signed bylaw for information purposes. Moved by Mayor Redicop. Comments or questions? Mayor Redicop.
We're going to enforce this bylaw? That's always the question. I suppose it's rhetorical.
We will enforce it to the degree that we receive complaints.
Okay, complaint-driven. Nicely done, Mr. Brady. I did have, I think there was one correction that I noted. It was 2.1 Section 2.1.18, which is on page 8 of the package. And I think it should say director planning. Oh, no, I see. Glasses again. I see it. No change. We're good. I just had the comments. I just wanted to reiterate about that subdivision signage, and hopefully we'll see something come from Mr. Jennings on that. Thank you.
Those points were well taken. Mr. Brady, I see your head pop up like a groundhog over there.
Thank you. Yes, absolutely. What we'll do, and for a number of the issues that were raised this evening, we'll analyze them absolutely. And I think what we'll do is we'll provide some options to council and give you the pros and cons. And this is clearly a policy matter for the municipality, and we need that direction from council.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. Further comments or questions? Seeing none, for information purposes, all in favor? That's carried. PDS 55-2017, looking for a mover for the following recommendation: that council extends draft plan approval for the River Trail Estates Phase 2 draft plan of subdivision located on the east side of Black Creek Road, south of Baker Road, until February 6th, 2018, and the owner and regional municipality of Niagara Planning and Development Services Department be so advised. A mover, Councillor Nutts. Speakers to that, Councillor Nutt.
Thank you. Through you, Chair, to Mr. Brady, we were provided a schedule when yourself, myself, the mayor, had met with the contractor doing the work. They had provided an updated schedule, as we had expressed at that time concerns that this development was not moving forward at an appropriate speed, and that it seems to be just lingering and is not very well received by the general public or my constituents in that area. So can you please provide an update on the construction schedule and what they've adhered to and what they haven't?
Mr. Brady?
Certainly, I'll provide what I have in front of me. We have, on this particular subdivision, gone back and forth with the site superintendent on a number of occasions, and you spoke of the most recent meeting that we had with the that you attended. At that point in time, there were six items that were identified that needed a schedule, and a schedule was provided. One dealt with sediment control improvements and installation. This is something that had come out of the Ministry of the Environment's concerns. That has been dealt with. Granular road base preparation. There had been a number of years and no real workings on the road system, and there has been some granular added now to the, and a base coat of asphalt has gone down. That went down about 2 weeks ago, a little behind schedule, but it has occurred. Three other matters: the restoration of neighboring properties. I've had a number of calls on those, and that has not, there's been absolutely no movement on that. That should have been finalized as of July 26th, according to the schedule. Restoration of the Black Creek outfall area was to be done by July 24th. There's been no work on that at all. And the one that I think has most recently cropped up because of, we've had an incredibly good grass growing season this summer, and the grass in and around the park and just generally throughout the property was supposed to have been cut and groomed to a certain extent. That was to have happened by August 18th, which is behind us, and it has not occurred. Jeremy has been on the site superintendent quite often and again spoke to the site superintendent today, and he again promised to, and I quote, knock down the weeds for sure sometime this week, if they can get a crew out there. That's where we're at.
Councilor Nutt.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Chair, to Mr. Brady. It's my understanding you attended the site today as well as myself.
I actually attended on the weekend. It wasn't today.
On the weekend. Thank you for the clarification. So I was out there today, and I'm a short fellow. Those weeds were almost to my shoulders. So, yeah, I was afraid to wade in as I'd be lost, and my family would have to send out a rescue party, but I know
Chris doesn't do well in corn mazes.
That's right. I do not at all. I can't see over. Is there any recourse or action we can take to get the weeds knocked down that the town could go in and perform the work and just backbill, or it's my understanding we are holding securities on these properties, correct?
We are. And under normal circumstances, what we would do is we would simply just go in, cut these weeds down, and put a bill to the developer. This is a little different. The earlier developer, not the one that we have now, we were a little nervous about, so we took the park. So we actually own the park. It's not been built yet. So it's their responsibility to deal with the grass. But if we take it down, it would be very difficult for us to bill it back to them since it's our property. So, however, we're at the point now of if something doesn't happen by the end of this week, I think we should simply get a contractor in there and cut the weeds and move on. I don't know what else to do. This particular developer is just not responding to a request. This development, just so that everybody understands, this development has its sewer in place, its stormwater system in place, its water line in place, its curbs and gutters in place, and a base coat of asphalt. If you went out there today, as you did, you would note that it looks like it's a registered plan of subdivision, with the exception of grass that's growing somewhat. There's absolutely no reason why this isn't registered, except for the possibilities that there be some legal concerns, which I don't completely understand, nor do I think I have the full picture of. However, and once it's registered, then the lots can be sold, and usually when that happens, interestingly, things like houses start to grow up and things get cleaned up because people want it to occur. So this is a very, very odd situation that we're into. So as the report has identified, staff's is recommending that they get the extension that they've asked for, but we've made it perfectly clear this is the last time that staff will be recommending an extension of draft plan approval. This is a very unusual circumstance because everything's in place, but if they don't register the subdivision and their draft plan approval lapses, they start over at the very beginning of the planning process again. And that's the kind of sword that hangs over this, but it doesn't seem to be recognized.
Councilor Nett. Thank you, Mr. Brady. I'm more in favor of the alternative recommendation number two that you have in there, and I'm definitely going to move that shortly when we discuss this. I'm going to allow my colleagues right after this point to I'll cede the floor and allow them. What I do want to ask is that somebody attend the property, Mr. Pacuzzi's property at the corner of Baker Road and Black Creek Trail, because the water is ponded so significantly there. I thought about taking off my shoes and socks and wading into the lake that has grown up beside his property. Also, when we had met with the developer, I had also asked that they move the concrete that's perched perilously close to his fence. And should it ever topple over due to the shifting ground with all the water that's there, it would cause significant damage to his nice privacy fence. My main concern with this development is that none of the houses that are bordering the land being worked on are given any consideration or, you know, there's no resident that can enjoy their backyard even just due to the significant mess that this contractor has created. So I'm going to leave my comments there and just ask that if somebody from, I don't know what can be done, but the water is ponded at that corner significantly, and it's not reaching the catch basin. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilor Nett. We have Mayor Redekop and then Councilor McDermott.
I have two questions. The first one is to Councilor Nett. Which of these alternatives were you contemplating? Perhaps moving.
This one that says council may choose to extend the draft plan approval for a lesser duration than February 6, 2018. Basically, the one that says we're going to give them until November 6, 2018.
Okay.
The three-month one.
My second question is to Mr. Brady. Do we have the latitude to warn the developer that this will be the last extension so that when this extension expires, we will not be extending?
Mr. Brady?
council can certainly choose to say that the extension period is whatever duration they wish it to be, and they can say that the council is not contemplating ever extending this again. Council can change its mind if they wish to later on, but nonetheless, certainly council can say that, and staff has certainly told the developer that we're not going to be recommending extensions in the future.
And then some comments. This particular plan of subdivision was the subject of a meeting that we had, I guess, at the end of maybe the middle of July, and it looked like we were going to be getting this on track. I know that Councillor Nutt had received a lot of complaints from residents who were quite upset about the situation, and we took an approach with the developer that we didn't want to a position where we were arguing and fighting with the developer, but we, you know, if there were things that we could do to facilitate forward, we were there also to help, knowing that we had to protect the interests of our constituent neighbors. So I would be inclined, and we have a meeting actually scheduled, I believe, this Friday with some of the residents who want to know what's happening. So they have continuing legitimate and serious grievances with respect to this development. I support the notion of shortening the duration of the extension. I support letting the developer know that we would not likely be inclined to further extend. But what I would suggest, if we're going to do that, that we put this report over to the first meeting in September, first committee meeting in September, give the developer notice that this is exactly what we're contemplating doing, and they can, and invite them to appear and respond to any questions or concerns that we might have if they're still outstanding 2 weeks from now.
So are you suggesting a deferral motion of the report as it is currently before us, Mayor?
I'm thinking that's what we might do, and I'm thinking, because if we're thinking of taking, I'm guessing that the developer may be familiar with the report. So the developer may be thinking that we're going to extend this for 6 months, and they've got 6 more months of latitude with respect to this. I think it would be helpful if they were put on notice that we're not contemplating doing that, that we're contemplating shortening this to 3 months, and whether it's November the 6th or the end of November or whatever, and that we're not contemplating further extending. So that there is, we need to put them, I think, on notice that they're in serious jeopardy, and it would be helpful if they came out the first week of September to talk to us. Let us know why and respond to any questions that we might have, and then we can go from there. So I'm not putting that on the table. That's what I'm thinking we might want to do.
Okay. So he hasn't put that forward formally, so Councillor Nutt, I'm going to recognize Councillor McDermott first and then come back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this has been going on for some time now, and I know because I'm on social media quite a bit, that we hear a lot about this development. And it seems, because of the fact that we can't seem even to get the grass cut, people in that area think we're complicit with this sort of nonsense, which it is. It's nonsense. It's not good neighborly type of way for a developer in this community to act. So I think I'm glad that there's going to be a meeting held, but I think that we really have to clean this place up real quick, because you know, there's high grass and ticks, and standing water is not helping matters. I mean, we cannot let these residents that are around this area to suffer through this without giving them a hand. So I think that we got to move on this real quick to, you know, get this, at least get this grass cut. I mean, really doesn't matter who does it. I mean, if we do it, they're gonna have to pay us anyway. So it's pay me now or pay me later. But let's get a cut, because, you know, us just sitting around and with all this inaction, it looks like we're being complicit in allowing this to happen, and we as a council cannot do that. So that's just my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor McDermott. Mr. Brady, the securities that we have, should this keep tracking the same way it's going and this lapses and they have to start the process over, do we retain control of those securities to do as we see fit, or do those have to be transferred back to the developer?
That's a very interesting question. Very, very few subdivisions ever get to this state. This is very odd. What I'm thinking is that the security should be, if we're going to cancel this subdivision or let it lapse, the security should be used to stabilize this area. And as I've said in the past, the best way to do that is knock down all those mounds out there and go in there and hydroseed.
That's the answer I was hoping to hear, that we can utilize those dollars to at least get this in a state of livability for those surrounding it until the next.
The developer has been made aware of the fact that that was something we were contemplating at one point, and certainly his agent wasn't happy with the thoughts.
Councilor Lubberts, I saw your hand up.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just looking at the background of this here, in the report, I guess on page 2, the draft plan approval was for 118 lots, yet they only registered for 23 lots, because I'm looking at that they're saying phase one of the development was registered in June of 2000 and resulted in the construction of 23 homes. The remaining 95 lots were to be constructed in phase two. How does that become phase two if it was registered as phase one? That's the way I'm reading it. I'm a little confused, maybe.
Mr. Brady?
The back in 2000, the first phase of the subdivision was registered, and that resulted in the construction of the homes. The remaining part of the subdivision was not was not registered. And if you read to the next paragraph, it talks about a red line revision to phase two was approved by municipal council in 2004. The revised plan maintained the street layout but reduced the number of lots to 90 parcels intended for single family development. So there's been some changes to phase two over time by coming to council and asking for some modifications to it. So today what we have is what was modified by council at their back in 2004, although there have been extensions of draft plan approval repeatedly through that period.
Councilor Lubberts?
So the original draft plan that was approved for three different phases? I guess is that right?
Two different phases, phase one and then phase two. Phase one has been registered and built, and phase two remains.
Well, what about phase three? Because then under analysis, when we go back to the second paragraph in analysis, planning staff note that since the last extension of draft approval, the applicant has completed servicing for phases one and three of the development.
What we're talking about now is within side of the what is remaining. They were going to phase it, but what they've done is they have put in the services for the rest of the development. All of the servicing for the development's in place.
So when they get draft plan approval, was the draft plan approval for three different phases or two different phases? It's 118 lots total, it looks like. That's what they got draft plan approval for. And then you're only registering. They can just pick a phase and say, well, we'll just register phase one that we don't know about?
When the subdivision was draft plan approved, it was for the total subdivision. There wasn't a phasing plan involved at that time.
Okay. How did they get phasing?
They came in and asked for a portion of the subdivision to be registered. Council gave final approval to that in 2000, and it was registered at that time. And you will be giving final approval to this subdivision when we have the documentation for that to move forward as well.
Well, maybe that's where we need to stop. We're going to give draft plan approval for a subdivision, and they have to register the whole subdivision. If they want to do it in phases, that's fine, but it's already registered. Maybe it's our mistake. Maybe we shouldn't allow that to happen anymore.
Well, that's fine. I think you'll find that the development community feel very strongly in opposition to that because they want to be able to bring on the number of units as the market dictates. But if council gives direction to staff that there should be no phasing of developments, that's fine.
Councillor Lubert's any opposition to holding this off until September?
No, I don't have an opposition to that, no.
Any further points? Okay. Councillor Nutt.
Thank you. I'd just like to point out in the second alternative that I was speaking to that I would rather, I would like to move to when it comes back in September. It should say November 6, 2017. Currently in the report as it stands, it says November 6, 2018. It's a typo. And Mr. Brady said that he will have it corrected. Just my last comment. Before this, the dirt was churned up in this area and the servicing installed, these were fields that the people that utilized in lieu of park, people walked all over the place over there. The Navy cadets would come across from the hall and that. So I'm glad that Mr. Brady has pointed out that with the securities, we'll be able to at least restore some of that. And I do agree with the mayor that we should put them on notice, because I have no plans of voting in favor of extending this whatsoever. And I will be pushing for the 3 months from my colleagues. I don't feel that the project manager is living up to his side of what was agreed to. And I believe strongly that the town has fulfilled our obligations from a contractual side, and that they're not fulfilling theirs for what was agreed to when we had our meeting. So that's the last thing I'm going to say on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Nutt. Mayor Redekop, would you like to put forward a deferral motion to the next PDS meeting?
I would. I wonder if I could ask Councillor Nutt to say one more thing. We're now at the end of August. November the 6th is about 10 weeks. Would you be, not just you, but I guess all of council, would you be inclined when we put them on notice that we say the end of November for the extension?
I would be agreeable to say that when we deal with it in September, the clock starts ticking for their 90 days right then.
Yeah, okay. That's fine.
We'll establish the date at that time.
That's fine. So, but what we're clearly contemplating is a three-month extension from September the 5th or thereabouts.
That's what I'm
Okay, so I would move that we defer this to the meeting on September the 5th, council committee meeting on September the 5th, to allow staff to notify the developer that we are contemplating an extension of no more than 90 days, and we would like them to attend the meeting on the 5th to respond to questions that we have with respect to their lack of progress with respect to some of the things that have been referred to by councillors here and how it affects the neighbors.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. So that deferral motion is on the floor. Speakers to the timing of Tuesday, September 5th. Seeing none, all in favor of deferring? That's carried. Brings us to new business or inquiries under PDS. Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Chair Passero. I, through you to Mr. Brady, I know that this is going to come out of left field for you, but I've been in discussion with Mr. Walsh from Infrastructure Services with respect to the Ridgeway Crystal Beach Kinsmen Club, and he sent me a bylaw number 119-03 with respect to the regulation of use of parks and beaches in the town of Fort Erie. The lease that the Kinsmen Club received does not talk about not having amplified music inside the building. It doesn't have any mention of that whatsoever. So the Kinsmen Club does have weddings and events within the confines of the building, and they do have amplified music. So there was a complaint that was driven, and that's what leads me to discuss this with you, because it falls under your purview, the bylaws. And under the bylaw, under general regulations and prohibitions, number 3, it says no person shall in any park, and skipping down to letter I, operate any amplified system or loudspeaker. I'm assuming that that actually means outside and not inside a building. I drove by on Friday night and sat inside the parking lot because they have a regular person who, for lack of a better word, jams with other musicians. And all of their events end at 11 o'clock for amplified music. I really couldn't hear anything. So I'd like to get that changed.
Mr. Brady.
Your reading of the bylaw is that you believe that amplified music is permitted inside a building.
The bylaw doesn't stipulate whether it's outside or inside. I'm assuming that the bylaw is speaking to outside in a park and open spaces. Since the building is in a park setting and the amplified music by the kinsmen is only played inside the building, I would like to see an amendment to the bylaw.
I understand your point. I'm not sure it's necessary, but I understand your point. For example, let's put the kinsmen aside for the moment, and not to put the mayor in difficulty, but we'll talk about the Lions Community Center. I've certainly been there, and there's amplified music there as well. That also sits within our park. And there, I've also been to events where there's been amplified music inside our arenas, which I know you have as well. And that certainly, some of them are within our parks as well. So I don't know if it's needed to clarify that. I think your interpretation is quite correct. Inside the building is fine. It's the outside the building that we have the issue. And then even if you do want to have amplified music outside the building, we do have a process, and that's called events through L. Yeah, so I'm not... I understand what you're saying, but your interpretation is correct, and I'm not sure there's a need to modify the bylaw.
Mr. Brady, Mr. Brady, our lease agreement with the kinsmen for the Bill Connolly Clubhouse, would they not, in essence, after leasing that, become the owner-operator of that facility, and it would cease to be designated as a part of the park?
I'm not sure I'm willing to go quite that far, but certainly it's in the park.
Yes.
And they lease the building from us. And yeah, it's
Schofield.
Beg your pardon. I was just going to say that it is a municipal capital facility, so it would be part of the park.
Okay. Mr. Crookett?
Just to add, I know Mr. Walsh had contacted Mr. Lustig, our solicitor, about this, and Mr. Lustig's opinion is that the building and the noise within the building is considered part of the park, and the bylaw does apply to within the building, so we'd have to change that bylaw.
Okay, so who am I looking towards for the path forward if council is amenable to doing that? Mayor Redekop.
Well, I think what we need to do is get something... First of all, we all need to be familiar with what's in the bylaw. I haven't looked at the bylaw recently, so we need that. We need to get Mr. Lustig's comments with respect to that, and then maybe some suggestions as to how we could amend it so that we still permit music inside a park if it's a building. But there has to be some noise bylaw implications, because you could have an amendment that would permit music within the building, but it could be so loud that it disrupts the neighborhood. So I think we need some advice from staff, some background information for us, and then so maybe a memo from staff with respect to the issues that have been raised by Councillor Butler and how council might consider making changes that would accommodate whatever our needs are.
Because we definitely don't want to waive the noise bylaw. We always want that provision available to residents. But we definitely don't want, we don't want the kinsmen subjected to what they're being subjected to. Mr. Brady, is that possible to have a memo forthcoming? Actually, Councillor Butler, a very quick question, as you've been in conversation with the kinsmen. Is this a time-sensitive matter? Do they have something upcoming that we're looking to achieve this by?
So, yes, thank you, Chair. So what has happened is that the bylaw officer or Mr. Hutton has told them that they need to give notice to their people that rent on Friday evenings, and they've been renting for 2 years, so it's a source of income for the Kinsmen Club. And it now prevents them from having any other events there with amplified music, such as weddings and showers that have already been pre-booked. So it is conflicting, and I'm hoping that we can get this resolved in the next week. I know it's kind of quick, but.
Mr. Brady, can we accomplish that timeline to have something before us?
I'm not certain. I would be looking very much to our legal department to provide us with the wording that they think is appropriate. I was unaware of what the CAOs just mentioned, that our lawyer has identified this as an issue. So I'll be speaking to Mr. Lustig, and I suspect through the CAO in the morning, and see if we can come up with some wording.
Yeah, that sounds like a good task. You're going to have to work all 5 days this week, Mr. Cookett. Anything further, Councillor Butler, under new business inquiries?
No, thank you.
Further members of council, new business or inquiries? Seeing none, comments or questions on the business status reports? Seeing none, I will turn the chair back to Mayor Redekamp.
Thank you very much, Councillor Passero. That takes us to infrastructure services, and that's you, Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Infrastructure services is now opened. There are no presentations and delegations for this evening. That moves us to report number IS-26-2017, award of engineering services for coal docks risk assessment, contract number ISE-17P-COAL-17. Can I have a mover, please? Your Worship, thank you. That report is on the floor. Any questions or comments? Mr. Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed that the money we're receiving or accepting is a one-third cost contribution. Just wanted to get maybe an update, if we could, as to how conversations are going with the PVA for a possible other one-third, and Mayor Redekamp may have some information.
They're going well, and my understanding is that on August the 24th, the Peace Bridge Authority will be considering a report from Mr. Reines. So we should have some word by that's Friday, isn't it? Thursday. So we should have some word by the end of this week, beginning of next week, with respect to that. And if they do participate, that will good partnership and put us in good shape.
Excellent. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That motion is carried. That moves us to new business inquiries. Any Councillor Nutt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Cookett, because Mr. Walsh isn't here tonight, I just wanted to take a moment to recognize George Stojanovic and Nick for the great work that they did on West Main Street. They were able to come out and meet with me in the morning and walk through everything that was going to be done and explain it in a manner that allowed me to relay some additional information. I know Mr. Walsh had also provided me with a bit of the background information as well as future capital projects for that roadway and what they plan to do after Park Lane's finished building out Phase 3, which they're currently doing, and that this was the best short-term fix for the residents, as the road's really smoothed out now and is in very nice condition, and that the capital project behind that is coming sooner than residents realize. But I just wanted to commend them both, because they took the time to meet with me very early morning, and they were very professional, as a few residents did stop by when seeing us out there and ask some questions as well. So.
Nick and his brother, Nick.
Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was very happy that earlier tonight we approved the Waverly Beach reconstruction of the sidewalk. I'm down there quite often, and what I'm hoping we can start doing as a municipality is stop piecemealing a lot of our park improvements. And I'm going to use this as a for instance. We're going to be spending a lot of money to redo probably the most utilized or viewed singular item within Waverly Park, being the boardwalk. The washroom pavilion floors are in horrendous shape, and there's still one bench remaining. The other ones have been replaced. There's still one bench remaining that I think was put in during Mayor Redekamp's first term as mayor. That's how long it's been there. So I'm hoping that if I could put something forward for council now, that we could maybe include for just consideration as part of our 2018 budget the replacement of the last lowly bench, as well as the resurfacing of those washroom pavilion floors. I just hate to spend a huge chunk of money on something that now becomes the jewel of a park, and now people go to use the washroom, and it just fails horrendously as far as what our standards go. I know that we have an asset management program that probably says that this bench is slated to be replaced in this year. The floors are slated to be replaced 4 years from now, whatever it might be. But I think we should be taking a closer look as to when we're doing major park improvements, what are the little things that we should be doing at the same time? We just don't want people to kind of get the high of, oh, it's great, and then they go to use the washroom and it's like, wow, they couldn't have found an extra so many thousand to finish this at the same time. So I'd like to put that forward, if the mayor deems it appropriate, as a motion that we just include those two items for consideration in the 2018 budget.
Well, I don't think you need to bring a motion. I think you can make a request for that. And
okay, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other comments or inquiries? Seeing none. Moving forward to business status report. Any questions with respect to the business status report? No? Then that completes infrastructure services. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Butler. And that then takes us to corporate and community services. Councillor Nutt, you're still the chair.
I am still the chair, Your Worship.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. My program is still up to date.
So tonight, under corporate and community services, we have no presentations, delegations, no reports to discuss. So I'm going to go right into new business and inquiries. Any new business or inquiries for corporate services from any of the council? Okay, seeing none, I actually have one. I'm going to make the request to Mr. Cookett that in regards to the next meeting where we are going to discuss PDS 552017, that we also formulate a formal communication that can be delivered to residents with the action that the the Director of Planning would be amenable to sending a letter to just the impact of residents around there, letting them know that the council is moving forward with the plan of action in regards to this developer and this development. Mr. Cook?
We can put something together to hand out to all the neighbors in that area.
Thank you. One thing that one of the residents, one of my constituents, when I was speaking to him in regards to this, he just had said, you know, as a point of reference, the communication could be a little bit better because there are so many rumors that are out there flying around, the developer's bankrupt, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And unless anyone is calling and asking those questions, it's just right now a hornet's nest of rumors. So I think that if we could do some type of communication, it would be very helpful for the constituents in that area. All right, moving on to the business status report. Are there any questions in regards to the business status report? Being none, I'll close corporate and community services and hand the chair back to His Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Nutt. That takes us to scheduling of meetings. I can say that there's a land committee meeting at 9 a.m. on Friday, August 25th. Are there any other meetings scheduled? Councillor Nutt, back to you for the final resolution.
Thank you, Your Worship. The Council and Committee for the Town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns at 9:18 p.m.
All those in favor? That's unanimous. Thank you.